studio, deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio. This is the Rick Emerson Show.
Yes, it is. Thank you so much. Why, hello there. It's 1 minute and 18 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of May in the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming by and making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed, yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970. Solid State Radio. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for coming by, making it part of your listening day. It is Wednesday, and welcome to Day 12. If you would like to be part of our broadcast today in a telephonic sense, here's how you do that. You pick up your phone and you call 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email us if you like with your comments, your questions, your clarifications, your kvetches. You know all this crap. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. Or you can call us 503-733-2970. Yesterday was some guy calling with a bad observation about crosswalks and somebody who was quitting his job, packing his family into some sort of jalopy and traveling all across the country for no real reason. Who knows what it'll be today? Every day an adventure. Every day a guided tour into a no man's land of inanity and non sequiturs. That's going to be our new slogan. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Scotty J. ably standing by to non-screen your calls as we begin another exciting program today. 503-73. Just standing by just to mindlessly shepherd you along right onto the air, no matter how off-topic you may be.
Maybe that's his way of rebelling since he doesn't want to be known as the call screener.
Exactly. Well,
good job.
Yeah, mission accomplished. Done and done. The call non-screener. Oh, and here they come. Thanks so much. I'm going to quit saying things like that. All right, it's 503-733-2970. By the way, that Nate guy who called yesterday, it's him. It really is just like a sitcom or a reality show or a reality sitcom, something like that in the making. Because it was him, his one-year-old kid, his deaf girlfriend. He was quitting his job. He didn't keep his money in the bank. He kept it all literally in a drawer somewhere. He was quitting his construction job, taking the money out of the drawer, getting into... What did he drive? He drove some Subaru...
Subaru Forester.
It's like a $40,000 car, right? Mm-hmm. And a construction base pretty well, I guess. Anyway, so he's packing his... He's packing... What is that? What do they say? National Lampoon's Vacation? You're taking the tribe cross-country. So he's packing his whole family into this car, and I think his destination is somewhere in Wisconsin. I forget why. Doesn't really matter. So he's asking us for traveling advice and for destinations and diversions along the way. So we'll do that. I forget exactly when he was leaving. It's a couple weeks, something like that. So we'll plan out his destination. We will take control of his mindless existence and mold his everyday activities. It's what we do. It's 503-733-2970. I got kind of a backache. 503-733-2970. No snippy comment about how it must be from all the exercise I'm doing? You failed me there.
I just feel sorry for you because you're missing out. It's been such a good couple of days to go riding.
Here's why. Well, we'll talk about it in a second. 503-733-2970 or Rick at RickEmerson.com. And by the way, to answer the question from... to answer your question, pal, why am I here? I'm here on a mission of mercy. To answer the question is that guy that emailed me yesterday. I don't have the email in front of me. There's some dude... Some guy, some tool, emailed me yesterday, and he said, let's see, what does it say here? This is from Dan, I believe his name is. He says, Rick, we listen to you in the office. Every day at the beginning of the program, you say, welcome to day 12. Exactly what does that mean? A whole office full of people want to know. We've answered this question a couple of times. I'm not really sure whether this is on our FAQ or not. You know, we did that whole show where we took questions and we took the things that people wanted to know about the program because I was presumably going to be, updating the FAQ and I was going to be letting people know, you know, I was just in case people had questions about things that we did every day. And then we took all those questions, and I'm not really sure that I ever actually updated the site. I'm pretty sure that I wrote all that crap down and then lost it and never did anything with it. So there you go. So if you are curious as to why we say welcome to day 12 every day, it's from the Bob and Doug McKenzie comedy bit, The 12 Days of Christmas, where they do the whole, you know, whatever, five golden toques, you know, and the three turtle... Three turtle. What did I say?
Partridge.
No, they... And some beer on a tree. Whatever it is they say. Three turtlenecks. Anyway, there's that Bob and Doug McKenzie bit, the 12 Days of Christmas. And when they get to the 12th day of Christmas, they say hello and welcome to day 12, which is just a thing that stuck in my head years ago. And so I have no idea why I say it's one of those, it's just a little tick that I do every day. I don't know why. Really? So Scotty wants me to know he actually is screening people out. Really? You've screened several people out so far. All right. Does it feel, is it like using a new set of muscles to actually screen people? Really? Does it feel like you're doing a new kind of stretching exercise now to actually go through and find out what people are talking about and decide whether they go on? Okay. It's anyway, so that's why we say welcome to day 12. So there you are. And welcome to day 12. Was the guy really calling with a Uranus joke? All right, that's almost worth... Put those through from now on, at least the next couple. That's almost funny. It's 503-733-2970. It is Wednesday. Here's what's coming up today. Ow, ow, my neck. Get that chainsaw away from me. It hurts. We've got that. What else? We have the saddest teenage boy in all of Toyland. But it's not you, so you can feel good about that. Speaking of which, I have that pile of news stories. People to be glad you are not. People whose lives pale in comparison to your own. So in case you're feeling bad about your sad state of existence, I have a whole pile of people you can be glad that you're not. Let me just read one now. Just to get a little sample. Get a little sample story. Right. I'm not even going to make you wait. I'm going to do one right now at the top. This is like when your parents let you open one present on Christmas Eve or something. Or whatever. That's what this is. This is from Australia. No, I'm sorry. From Austria. Are those two countries related somehow? Tim Riley, is there some relation between Austria and Australia?
One has kangaroos, one does not.
One has Nazis, one doesn't. Those names seem too similar to... It doesn't seem like it could be an accident.
Austria is in the middle of Europe. Australia is a separate... Austria has been around for hundreds of years.
Austria is the one where the Von Trapps walked across.
Right.
Have you ever noticed this at the end of The Sound of Music? And I bet you have. At the end of The Sound of Music, Tim Riley, have you ever noticed this? That they're walking... I mean, they're running out of the beer hall, right? They're at the beer hall, and the guy who looks like David Niven, the guy, he kind of looks like Mr. Spock, too, from Star Trek, and he says, and he's introducing them at the end, and he says, the Von Trapp family singers, and then they fail to appear because they're on the run, they're laminate already, and then, you know, they clap and nobody comes up, and then the guy says again, the family Von Trapp. You know, and it's like he's dragging it out. And, of course, the Von Trapps are already running. And the nuns have stolen the cables out of the Nazis' cars. And the Von Trapps are running, and they go through the cemetery. And Rolf confronts them. And then Christopher Plummer says, you'll never be one of them. And then he blows the whistle, and then they got to, you know. And then they magically cut to the Von Trapps on top of a mountain range. Mm-hmm. How did they get to the top of the mountain range? They have no food. They have no water. They look really happy and cheery and blue-eyed and white, and yet, like, the last shot of The Sound of Music is this...
Clothes fresh from the dry cleaner.
They all look like Breck children. Mm-hmm. The last shot of The Sound of Music, I swear to God, is a helicopter shot showing them on top of this Alp mountain range. And like, the place that they're going to is like 1,000 miles away. I mean, it makes no sense at all. I mean, it's showing them dandily skipping along a mountaintop. And their destination is like, I mean, it's like they're going to Mount Doom to throw the one ring into, you know, into the fiery pit.
They went to Vermont.
They did. No, but I mean, they didn't walk to Vermont. I'm not talking about, I know in real life, the Von Trapps, I mean, they must have really, there must be some answer because it's a real story. It's a true story. I know they really did escape. Hmm. And then they ended up in the United States. It's just the end of that movie is completely confusing because you have no idea how they're possibly going to make it to this destination that's like 500 miles away with nothing to eat and nothing to drink and they have no shoes. And the mountains are covered in rocks and snow. I mean, how is that even physically possible? What, did they teleport? Is there some sort of like an atomic ray gun that beamed them to their destination? It doesn't even seem like a thing you could actually do.
Yeah, it's kind of a Cold War thing.
I just assumed where they were was really close to the mountain, and they just ran up them.
You can't run up the Alps are like 1,000 miles high. They're the Alps. It's not like you're going over the baseball mound.
They had Nazis after them. They were very motivated.
I suppose. I guess Nazis will motivate you. There ought to be some show where, like, you have to work out and then there's Nazis as coaches. They just relentlessly beat you if you slow down. Do your jumping jacks faster. Well, in any event, there ought to be a reality show based on The Sound of Music. And the deal is to win and just set you loose in the Alps with no food or water or shoes. Go! You know? And if you survive, if you come over the other side alive, then you get a record deal. And the Von Trapps did end up in Vermont, and they toured the whole country in a bus. Yeah. They toured the country in a bus, and then the real Mrs. Von, whatever her name is, the Frau blah blah blah, whatever, Maria, ended up being really fat and embittered because she sold the entire story to Von Trapps to that film studio, to Universal Pictures or whatever it was, for like $2,500. Well done. Get a lawyer next time. Oh, she's in the movie though. There is the real Frau Maria, or Fraulein Maria. I have such, I don't even know my Fraulein. Own language. Is that what you say? Is it Fraulein Maria?
Tim?
I guess so.
Or whatever. The real Maria Von Trapp though is in The Sound of Music. You can see her waddling along in the background at one point like a big overstuffed penguin. Anywho, I'm just gonna give you a little advance today. An Austrian teenager. My point was that Greenland and Greenlandia, like if there was Greenland and Greenlandia, you'd think those were two countries that were related. Austria and Australia, it seems like they ought to be related somehow, in any event.
No.
Here's an advanced story, a guy you can be glad you're not. An Austrian teenager was run over by a tractor twice. Once when he fell off, and again when his friend drove back to see where he was. Hubert Hochstetter, 17, from the village of Kennekemkirke, fell off the tractor as he and his 22-year-old friend Joseph Mittringer were driving along the road. He fell into the back wheels of the 3-ton vehicle and had his ribs and several vertebrae broken. But his pal Mittringer, who could not see his friend lying behind his back wheels, put the tractor in reverse to go back and look for his friend, and in doing so, ran over him again, this time breaking both arms and both legs. Mittringer panicked when he saw what happened and drove off, leaving his friend in the field, all of his limbs shattered. There you go. You can be glad you're not that guy. It's 503-733-2970. That's got to be a bad sensation. You fall off a tractor, it runs over you, and then you think, well, at least my friend is here. He'll come get... No, no, ow, ow! Good times. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. Why, hello there, and how are you?
Hello.
Hello.
Okay. Hi, how are you doing?
I woke up this morning kind of mad. Well, because, A, my neighbors who yelled at me because I was, you know, made noise before, they're up at 5 o'clock every morning pounding around, and B, I woke up and Muppet had chewed my glasses.
Oh, the earpieces? Like the earpieces on your glasses?
Yes.
Yeah, no, Max does that too.
See, and I didn't think that he chewed hard plastic things.
Oh, they'll chew anything that tastes like you. Anything that smells like you, they'll chew.
It was, I was so mad. I saw the case on the ground. I'm like, no, 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 no.
Of glasses that had, you know, the plasticky part on the earpieces, and now it's just down to the wire because he actually chewed and swallowed the plastic bits of her eyeglasses.
Muppet ate half of my eyeglasses case, and then there were little bits of it thrown up all around my room. Like, great. This is the grossest thing ever.
I caught Max eating the inside of one of my shoes. Like, one of the little, like,
dogs are so rich.
No, just, yeah, literally, it's like inside your shoe where your heel goes. He was just chewing on the little leatherette part inside my shoe. So.
Plus, Muppet looks like a little freak because I got him clipped for a summer. And he is like half the size that he was. He looks like a little rat. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and they always come look at you like...
I love him when he looks like a little rat after he's chewed my glasses.
And they seem confused. It's sort of like, I'm all cold and I feel lighter. I don't... And they don't know how to use a mirror, so they don't know what's going on. And there's just a whole lot of, I feel different. I don't feel like myself.
He keeps burrowing under things. I think he feels naked. I let him get a little too fluffy this last time. So that's what I woke up to this morning.
Fantastic. It's going to be a great day. By the way, people, and by people I mean Seamus, he believes he has cracked some sort of a code on your MySpace page, and that he can deduce your relationship status by whatever song you have embedded on your MySpace page.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't know if that's true or not. You probably shouldn't reveal whether it's the case. But
I put on whatever song like I really want to listen to that day.
He believes that when he goes to your MySpace page that it's some sort of Rorschach. It's some sort of tea leaf. And if he looks at it, he can determine exactly how your day is going and how things with Raoul are ticking along. Just so you know. So people read a lot into those things.
Well, then what would it mean if I have pretty... effed up from the super suckers.
I don't know. I'm sure he'll have some theory about
it.
Tim Riley is here. He not only shares Von Trapp information, he prepares the following stories for your edification, ladies and gentlemen.
And a whole bunch of things. First, the governor has just signed into law the new same-sex unions and domestic partnerships.
So that's here in Oregon?
Yep. They ban will affect January 1st.
See your face.
Society crumble.
Yeah.
60% of Americans now favor setting a timetable to leave Iraq, according to USA Today. Dick Cheney pays the Iraqis a visit and finally admits there may be some problems there. There's a laugh here as the president visits the flattening tornado town. The queen has a laugh and only one during dinner. A drunk falls on the fair during a Mets game and breaks her back. And we say with pride that Katie Couric has delivered the CBS Evening News its worst ratings in 20 years.
Well done. Thank you, Katie. God bless you. Thanks for being a team player and pulling your weight. Your weight being admittedly somewhat larger than the weight of most people. It's 503-733-2970. The lowest ratings in 20 years.
So that would have been Dan Rather way back when.
Yep. Well, that just means
was that before... Is this the frequency, Kenneth?
87. No, that's before this, what's the frequency, Kenneth? Because what's the frequency, Kenneth? It was like 91.
So that was frequency.
Yeah, so that's before Dan Rather started to go crazy and be stalked by people. 87 would have been like the height of Iran-Contra. So...
Oh, I have a new stalker, too, and I want to say hello to her.
Really?
She ran out of her office yesterday down several flights of stairs to greet me on the street. Her name is Teresa, but she claims she's not a stalker.
Hi, Teresa. Stay away from Tim. Seriously. We'll call the cops. All right. 503-733-2970. Well, now that Katie Couric is an expensive, unfixable mistake, we've got to try twice as hard.
Look, yeah.
Let's start right now. Scott, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, what's going on, man?
What's up, brother?
Hey, man. I just wanted to say thanks for yesterday, man. It was my 30th birthday, and like an idiot, I decided to go to work.
Yeah, and that truly was a bad choice.
Yeah, it was a bad choice.
Yeah.
But I, you know, had probably like the worst day I've ever had in my job until about 11 a.m. So.
And so what happened at 11 a.m. to make your day better?
The Rick Emerson Show came on the air.
I secretly knew the answer to that. I just wanted to hear you say it. Why was your day so bad?
Well, I'm a delivery driver for a beverage company. And
of course you are.
Sometimes the people that receive the products in some of the stores can be... and goose step and be pretty evil. So.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. But we brought a smile to your otherwise dreary day.
Absolutely. And also, I wanted to say, I went to the Pirates Tavern last night to celebrate my birthday.
Excellent. That is a brand new sponsor on the Rick Emerson Show. You're going to be hearing a lot more about them in the weeks to come. They offer fine vegan food, and it's now. Are you a vegan, sir?
No.
See, this is actually almost a better endorsement in some ways because, like me, I went there and not a vegan. But you know, I'm not saying this to shill, but really, if I hadn't known it was vegan food, I don't think I would have been able to tell.
Oh yeah. And it was pretty excellent. The bartender, he was like kind of a he had quite a personality, I'd say.
Okay, excellent.
And, it was a good time. I recommend it highly.
Excellent, thank you, sir. Well, we'll pass it along. Thank you for patronizing and supporting one of the sponsors of the Rick Emerson Show. And happy birthday to you.
Hey, thanks.
Thank you, Scott.
All right,
there you go. That's Scott. We got a break here in just a second. We got Steve Castamon coming up at the bottom of the hour. Talk about the assault on dicks. And what else do we have here? This is John. John, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah, this is just a Rick Emerson observation about that Austrian dude.
Yes.
It seems like he would have gotten run over by the tractor. His friend would have backed up, run over him again. And then, you know, a tractor having four wheels, he would have been in the middle of the tractor. He would have gotten run over again when his friend took off. So it seemed like he would have gotten run over three times.
That is a fair point. Okay, let me see here. An Austrian teenager run over by a tractor twice. Once when he fell off, and again when his friend drove back to see where he was. Hubert blah 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 fell off the tractor. He fell into the back wheels of the 3-ton vehicle and had his ribs and arm broken. But his pal Mitringer could not see his friend lying behind his back wheels, reversed to look where he was, and in doing so ran over him again. This time, okay, but so if he falls off, the tractor rolls over him backward. He gets crushed by the rear wheels. His friend, to look for him, continues to back up, so the front wheels go over him, breaking his legs. And then if the guy had sufficiently backed up, he might have been able to get like a turn radius, you know, like going on. So he might have been able to not run over him a third time.
The front wheels got him the second time?
Yes, because the guy continued to back up.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. I thought he fell off. Never mind.
I like you're all rooting for him to have been run over a third.
Well, you know.
The best part is how the friend's reaction was not to help him, but was just to speed off in a tractor. How far? It's faster just to get out of the tractor and run, I would think. All right.
If you're going to run over your friend, you might as well run over him like three or four times, you know?
That's true. I mean, really, how often are you going to get a chance to do that? You might as well burn out that punch card while you have the chance. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thanks, sir.
All
bye.
Right. One more, and then we'll break. Bob, you've got Von Trapp family information.
He was a Navy captain in the Austrian Navy, correct?
He had been conscripted. Yes, that is true.
Well, he left his mansion behind. What kind of Austrian money could he have possibly have taken with him? Retirement funds or something as he ran away? So his whole family ran away with absolutely nothing.
Yeah, no, they had nothing. Just the clothes on their backs. Because if you see, again, and maybe I'm putting too much historical weight on this final sequence of The Sound of Music.
But in the car that they were pushing that got confiscated. So, nothing with the clothes on their back and no money.
Yeah, no, when you see them on the hills in Austria, they literally have nothing. It is just the clothes. And I swear to God, the final camera, I keep going back to the final helicopter shot on The Sound of Music, they're in the middle of a real big nothing. I mean, they're on top of a mountain range, and everything is hundreds and hundreds of miles away. I have no idea how they actually ended up getting somewhere and how they weren't eaten by bears. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. So, all right, thank you. That's Bob. He shares my confusion about the end of the Sound of Music film, and that made any sense at all. All right. Well, there you go. All right, well, we should break here. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Steve Kastenbaum will talk about the assault on Fort Dix, which Tim Riley and I think was just fabricated. What else? Lisa Goddard's going to come on later on the hour. We'll talk about all things Iraqi later on, because I'm already getting freaking TV emails about it. We'll talk about the stupid bike challenge. I got to help the freaking children and so forth. That starts Monday. So, by the way, so don't expect me to drive. I didn't drive today. I'm not going to drive tomorrow. I'm not going to drive Friday. I'm not driving, or I'm bicycling. I'm not bicycling Saturday.
I saw your car in the
I'm not bicycling
there.
Sunday. I'm not going to get on my bike 1 second before, the Monday morning.
You're
in
just
no
making
way.
It worse for yourself.
No, I'm just going to let the car idle in the driveway for hours this weekend. That's what I'm going to do. I don't care if I have to go to the Flat Pantry, which is like 4 blocks away from me. I'm going to get in the car, and I'm going to drive there. And then I'm going to circle the block a couple dozen times. And I'm trying to run over some wildlife on the way, just so I can destroy the planet as much as possible before I have to start. So we'll talk more about that. Oh, and we've got a bunch of submissions for the second stanza of the Portland Anthem, which we are constructing one stanza at a time. So we'll break here. We'll come back. Tim Riley at noon with the AM 970 Noon News Hour. Later on, more from Sarah, Scotty, Jay, all of that on the way. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State.
I know you want this.
I'm not going to say it. Apparently it's Lebanese night at the Doug Fir. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. My mistake. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. What is that?
You're so weird.
Sticking out like you do like a fake buck teeth thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that when you think I've said something dumb? You do like a thing where
do
you
I make
simulate
them pick a lot.
Okay. Somebody needs a little more sleep.
I do need more sleep.
Bam.
Who are they to yell at me at like 1 on a Friday night saying, we need more sleep than the pounding around at 5 a.m. this morning? That is not me.
When you say the pounding around, what do you mean?
Like, it literally sounds like they were jump roping up there.
Assembling a meth lab. You know that's what it is, too. You know.
No, they're all sporty. They have like canoes and crap hanging from their porch.
They're canoeing upstairs. Quit that kayaking this instant. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now from New York City. CNN radio correspondent, Steve Kastenbaum. Hello, sir.
How are you?
I'm dandy, my friend. How are things? How's life in the city that never sleeps?
Great today. 80 degrees and sunny. Can't complain.
See, I can complain, but no one would care. It is beautiful outside here. The rain has finally stopped, I think probably for good. I say tempting fate. So for once, you and I are simpatico, my friend, on the weather. Let's start. I don't mean to sound cynical or just sort of reflexively suspicious of my government, but this thing about these, quote, it's that they always put it in quotes, quote, Islamic radicals, end quote, in this plot to kill some folks at Fort Dix in New Jersey. First of all, again, I don't mean to be flip about this, but seriously, why would you pick New Jersey as your target? And second of all, do they even really know that these guys were Islamic radicals? Why do they seem to be what's the phrase I'm looking for? They seem to be qualifying that quite a lot. Like, they're not really sure what they're talking about right now.
Well, it's interesting because I think the reason you see it in quotes is because that was the original term that the U.S. Attorney's Office used when they released this information. So everybody's hypersensitive now about, you know, painting with a broad brush. So they even use such a generic term like Islamic radicals. Even that they put into quotes, so they show that somebody else is calling them that or naming them that, not the newscaster. I think that's why you see that.
Okay, and so this is not the, I don't know, it's one of those things that is still a story in progress, I guess. The story is still developing, as they say.
Yeah, it is, but we did get most of it yesterday in the news conference as far as what these guys were allegedly planning to do, where they're from, why they were choosing Fort Dix. You know, one of the guys, I'm sure you read by now, was a pizza delivery driver for his father's restaurant for a while, which was right outside the boundaries of Fort Dix, and he used to deliver a lot of pizzas to people on the base. I guess it means the food on the base wasn't so good.
So where are these guys? And again, I really don't know a whole lot about this. It's been kind of a busy day in a lot of ways, and in the last 24 hours, I haven't had time to really scan a lot of the news. Where are these guys from?
They're all from that southern Jersey area, and one of them is from Philadelphia. And originally, four of them are from Albania, and one of them is from Turkey. Sixth is Palestinian, although he was born in Jordan.
What is...
Go ahead.
Albanian? Really?
Yeah, that's what's so weird about this. In fact, I just got off the phone a little while ago with the executive director of the Albanian American Council, and they're really upset about this because back in 1999, you know, the United States came to the rescue for Albanians in Kosovo and brought tens of thousands of them over to the United States to rescue them from possible slaughter.
Well,
and ethnic cleansing over there.
And really, the point I was going to make is you really ought to be talking to the executive director of Wag the Dog, because isn't that the last time we heard about the Albanians? Wasn't that the whole plot of the Wag the Dog, is that the Albanians needed, they were coming to get us? And I'm pretty sure, I may be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure that the David Mamet written Wag the Dog actually did have Albanians not only being our sworn enemies, but there was some Fort Dix connection there as well. So as somebody noted, I guess all that's really missing is for Willie Nelson to cut some song about this whole incident. What have the Albanians got against us? Are these guys just some nitwit Albanians who are off the reservation, as they say? Or is there some festering animosity towards America in Albania that I wasn't previously privy to?
Well, according to the Albanians I've spoken to, there isn't. They're saying that these guys are a bunch of loners as far as their beliefs are concerned. They bought into this worldwide jihad message that you see so prominently everywhere, and apparently there are numerous videotapes of these guys out in the woods in Pennsylvania taking target practice, doing practice runs, sort of paramilitary type things with weapons that they already owned. By the way, three of these guys were illegal immigrants here. They overstayed their visas. And the fact that they even possessed weapons, that alone carries a 10-year prison sentence.
Here's a dumb question, because I'm an ugly American. Is Albania is not a Muslim country, largely, is it?
Or
yeah,
is they it? Are. They are actually. They are Muslim, but they're not as extreme as some other Muslim countries as far as their devotion to their faith. I don't want to put, you know, say that they're not devout Muslims, but
they're
a little more assimilated than and a little more modern, shall we say, than some Muslim countries, some Middle Eastern countries are, as far as...
They're not required by law to live in mud huts or something.
They're right.
They don't regard television as a tool of the devil that's going to steal your soul. Oh,
they're living in today's world.
Albania almost, I don't mean to poke fun. I do mean to poke fun. Albania almost sounds like a made-up country. It's like, what is that country in... What is that country in Dilbert? The Albanians or whatever it is? Really, every time I hear Albania, it's like Nepos. It's like that it's like that country in Perfect Strangers. It just seems like a fabricated place. All right,
well, you know, Woodrow Wilson recognized that country first, so that's why they have an affinity in Albania for Americans. They're all flabbergasted by this.
All right. Well, we can look forward to the Fighting 303 or whatever being over in Albania, just knocking over the few remaining buildings this time next next year. That sort of seems to be the upshot of all of these situations.
By the way, the funny thing I find about this story is we for some reason, we always have a need to give somebody a name, a moniker. So within minutes, they were dubbing these guys the Fort Dix Six.
Really?
Yeah, that's a hard one to say.
Okay.
The Fort Dix Six.
Okay. I have, let's see, and I have, this is the final, well, you know, I just don't, I guess we're just going to wait to see kind of how this all shakes out. My final question to you is, are you a Sound of Music fan, Steve Kastenbaum?
A Sound of Music? No, I'm not.
Okay. Well, never mind then. I had this whole question about the end and the final camera shot at the end of the Sound of Music, but...
Well, I'm familiar with that.
I guess what I'm going to ask you is this. Does it strike you as odd at the end of The Sound of Music when it shows the Von Trapps walking over the Alps on their way to... You know, come to think of it, I don't even know where they were going. Were they going into... they were leaving Austria. Where were they even walking to? Do you even know where they were walking to?
I'm guessing either Switzerland or Italy. I don't know.
Let's say it's Switzerland. So they're walking over the Alps, which separate Austria from Switzerland. They're walking across. They have no food, no water, no shoes. And the final shot reveals that it is, in fact, hundreds of miles to get to their destination, and it's all covered with jaggy, you know, snow-capped rocks. There's no explanation as to how they were actually able to make that journey, and now that I've thought about it, it's just one of those things, it's like a popcorn seed stuck between two teeth. It's just bugging the hell out of me.
You want a Sound of Music Part 2?
I'm just... Yes, the Sound of Music Part 2. This time it's personal. It's one of those things that I'm going to have to ask every single person who comes on the show today until I get some answers, until I get some satisfaction on this. All right. Thank you, my friend. Enjoy New York City. We will talk to you soon.
See you soon. Thanks.
There you go. There's Steve Kathy, the Fort Dix Six. I still think the whole thing is made up. And I didn't want to... I sense that Steve Kastenbaum is not necessarily comfortable all the time with my journalistic flights of fancy, but it does seem strikingly similar to Wag the Dog. I'm pretty sure there was some Fort Dix connection in Wag the Dog. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Somebody will let me know if I'm just up in the night about that. Mike, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Why, hello there.
Well, Rick, it's amazing how you can take such a silly subject and make it the entire point of my day.
That's what I do. That's really my only demonstrable talent.
So what I did, I went on the Internet and I looked at a map of Austria.
Uh-huh.
They went to Switzerland.
Okay.
And it's only about 40 miles from where they were to the Swiss border, and it's low hill. So all they had to do was cross the border and walk up a hill.
Wait, so hold on.
They're in Switzerland.
Now do we know that they must have been going to Switzerland, because Switzerland even then was a neutral country, right?
Well, see, if you read between the lines, Mr. Von Trapp was sickened by the Nazi horde, so he obviously planned this. So he either had supplies, he transferred all his money to a Swiss bank, or if he was going to America, he transferred his money to an American bank. It wasn't a spur of the moment. He was, you know, he left knowing he was going to do this. He just did it then.
All right.
So he had all made it. It was an all planned thing, and he just crossed the Swiss border and he was safe.
And so you're saying it's only about 40 miles. You know, even walking 40 miles over snow capped hills, though, that's pretty difficult. I don't know that you could do that. How long would it take you to walk 40 miles?
Well, he's a mountain climber anyway, and they're all physically fit. You could probably do it in 2 days.
Yeah, but Heidi or Liesel or whatever that little girl's name
is. Yeah, but did you look in the last scene? Did you actually see Liesel?
Maybe they left her. They
might have killed her and ate her supplies.
They consumed her. Okay, this program is officially taking a really unpleasant turn, because now we're morphing a Sound of Music right into it.
But it's a movie, and they're not going to show every step.
They're not going to show the eating of Liesel.
But they obviously planned it, and they could have had a car waiting. They could have had a lot of things, but you know, they just crossed the Swiss border, which was an open border.
All right.
And they just walked across it, and they had all the money there, and poor Liesel sacrificed her life for the family.
Always remember the buttocks are to be consumed first.
That's exactly right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and we're done. Let's never talk about this again. Well, that pretty much ruins my whole plan to discuss this with Lisa Goddard, too, because there's really no way I can discuss... there's no way I can discuss cooking Liesel's buttocks on the air with Lisa Goddard. It's not going to... Dear appetizer, I was sickened by the discussion of the consuming of Liesel von Trapp's buttocks that I heard on the air this morning on the Rick Emerson Radio. I'm so glad I said that moments before Lisa went on hold.
Right there.
All right. I think for today I'm not going to call her Lisa Goddard. I think for today I'm going to call her Liesel Goddard. Just to be wacky. Let me read this one tiny email, then we'll get Lisa Goddard here in just a second. Rick, this email says, in a delicious slice of irony, the sound of music is virtually unknown in Austria, where the Von Trapp family are regarded as traitors who fled when their country needed them the most. And poor Maria screwed up and sold the book and film rights combined for $10,000. Oh, yeah. You chose poorly. All right. Let's see. What else do I have here? Anything else? Let's see. Rick, the Austrians are... Okay, this is just wrong. This guy says this. Rick, I'm pretty sure that they took the train out of town. That's not right. Let's, thank you. Welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the Hill. CNN radio correspondence for today known as Liesl Goddard, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Why, hello there. Hi, how you doing, sister? What's up on the Hill? How are things? How's life?
Things are good. You know, I met Maria Von Trapp.
Hold on, yeah, we're getting, is that on our end? Our phone, you're really, really low.
Is this better? Hello?
There we go. That's fantastic.
Yep.
Excellent.
All right,
problem.
All right. I'm pumping it up.
All right. So you met Maria Von Trapp, really?
I did. When I was a child, she was at a convention my mom went to. And I met her. She did not look like Julie Andrews.
She's a stout woman.
She was a very stout woman.
Sort of shaped like a bell.
Very, very much, very much so.
Yeah. She's actually in the sound. I can't believe I've spent nearly an hour. This is really how you capture the male 18 to 44 year old demographic, by the way, as you do
right.
A lot of really gay Sound of Music talk. She's actually in the Sound of Music. I forget where, but there's a sequence where Julie Andrews is at, I believe, the nunnery. No, it's right after she's left the nunnery, and she's walking along sort of a city street, and there is a stone, like a cobbled archway in the background. And Julie Andrews is walking along, I believe, guitar case in hand, and if you look in the background, there's a very sort of spherical woman waddling her way across the frame. That is actually Maria Von Trapp, the real Maria Von Trapp.
Hey.
I'm just, these are the things I like to point out, so.
It's good. I'm glad you're expanding. You're very inclusive here and bringing in the show tune audience.
Well, you know, what you just missed about 5 minutes ago, and it's a pity we weren't able to patch you through to hear this, was Steve Kastenbaum from CNN in New York City answering a question I had about the Von Trapps and how it is that they possibly were able to walk across the Alps with no food, water, or shoes and somehow still arrive at their destination without having to eat one of their own.
Right, and what was his answer?
He noted that it's actually only about, in combination with a caller, they noted that it was about 40 miles only, and it is actually relatively low hills, and they don't have to go across the more treacherous sections of the Alps, and so it actually is not quite as grueling as one might assume from
That's
the closing.
In the photo, they were on the steep rises there.
Yeah, the closing shot of the film is apparently not historically accurate.
They didn't actually bring those same outfits.
No, they didn't. The outfits, and I don't think at the end they're wearing the outfits that she's made out of curtains.
No,
they are.
Yeah, but they're theater outfits that they have.
They are wearing lederhosen, though.
For the walk.
All right, well, I think we're going to officially be done with the Sound of Music talk. Now, okay, and we're done.
Capitol Hill. It is a nutty day. It's a crazy day up here. I'm juggling five stories right now.
All right. So what are the most interesting / pressing of those stories right now?
Well, those are two different things. They're the most pressing. There's two Iraq. We've got a lot going on. It looks like the Democrats in the House are going to vote tomorrow on this idea to send half of the money now. Another half they'll get back to in July if things are going well. The president has now said, or the White House has said, that the president would veto that. He doesn't want it split up. He said, if you just give me half now, I'm vetoing it, which is a pretty, that's kind of, depends on how you look at it. Republicans might say that's showing some cojones. Others might say that that's, taking a big risk. But he's saying, I want all the money or none. Now, meanwhile, on immigration, it looks like the Senate is getting ready to move toward a vote next week. You know, we've had all these protests, but it's funny, last year, we must have talked about immigration every other day, and we've barely talked about it this year, but slowly, sides have been trying to move toward a bill, but they're not there yet. But even though they don't have this compromise ready yet, the debate is probably going to start next week. The vote could be in 2 weeks before Memorial Day, and it's anyone's guess what's going to happen. They're not ready, but they're looking toward a compromise that may have to do with families and how you address immigrant families. you allow perhaps one member of a family and not all to come into this country. They're not giving a lot of details. It's not very clear what's going on with that. So those are the two big pressing issues up here. I don't know. My favorite story, because I'm a political geek, is I was talking to Mel Martinez, the senator from Florida, who's mm-hmm. the Republican National Committee chairman, about the primaries.
Yes.
And he basically says he thinks it's just going to be a free-for-all because now Florida, his own state, has moved up its primary to January 29th. And there are some people now in Washington expecting that some state primaries could move into this calendar year, into December, November, because it's becoming just this nutty leapfrog.
How great would that be?
Wouldn't that be crazy?
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, though, but wasn't it like the RNC or the DNC or somebody was trying to put a smackdown on him? They were saying that if Florida moved the primaries, that they were just going to not send their delegates?
That's the DNC, and they've got a clause in their rules that says if you move your primary ahead of February 5th, unless you're one of four states, everybody else, if you move your primary, then we will cut your national convention delegates essentially in half. And that's why, so what's happening now in Florida is the Republicans are, the legislature itself actually voted unanimously, the House, the state House in Florida, to move their primary date. But the Democratic Party in Florida is now scrambling to try and find a way to hold their primary some other date because they don't want to lose their delegates, and it's just a mess.
Boy, it just makes me, Florida is sort of like, I was going to say they're the Harpo Marx, but it's time to update my pop culture references. They're sort of like, if you've seen Anchorman, they're sort of the Steve Carell of the American political process. It just every time they open their mouth, every time Florida does something, it's just weird and sort of non sequitur and serves no purpose but to just sort of mess up the entire process, which is...
Exactly. And that's what you've got to think about this, is that Florida, 2004, they got a little jealous of Ohio. They were like, not this year, baby. This year, we are going to be the spoilers again. We are going to be the messy ones.
Fantastic.
I don't know. But so it's going to be very dicey. And it looks like this RNC chairman says maybe he wants a national primary day next time around.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Whew. All right. I gotta calm down and I'm going to let myself get too ratcheted up about this. Final note today. So we've covered The Sound of Music, we've covered Iraq, we've covered immigration, we've covered the Florida moving up their primary. Have you heard this Al Sharpton sound?
I haven't heard the sound, no.
Okay, this is fantastic, Al Sharpton, of course, who was responsible for this whole ruckus, this brouhaha, this imbroglio. Is the G in imbroglio silent? Am I mispronouncing that? Imbroglio, or I think it's got to be imbroglio. I don't think that G is pronounced. In any event...
No, don't confuse it with Natalie Imbruglia, right? Her name?
As dumb as it is, I think I might be doing that.
That's what it sounds like you're doing.
Well, let's just pretend I never said that whole thing. So Al Sharpton, of course, was responsible with his whole business with Imus a few weeks ago because Imus was, you know, made some remarks.
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah. it was under the radar. And Sharpton was like, we've got to be more tolerant and blah, blah, blah. Was just going on about everybody's got to embrace. And, you know, speaking for myself, yesterday, finally, the last person on the Rick Emerson Show, we all have now finished and passed our CBS diversity and tolerance tests. So I now am able, Lisa Goddard, to spot intolerance when it happens. I wasn't able to do it. But now, thanks to CBS and their human resources department, I am now able to spot intolerance. So here's Al Sharpton.
The conversation you had with Sarah like a week and a half ago. That she may have labeled intolerant, but that was before you were actually registered.
It's true. No, I couldn't be blamed at that point. It couldn't be helped. I didn't know what I was doing. So here is, this is from about, I know this is, I think, 3 days ago, and I forget the location. I don't have the location in front of me. But this is Al Sharpton, and this is post-IMUS. This is after Al Sharpton anointed himself like the captain of tolerance in America. This is Al Sharpton discussing Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, who is a Latter-day Saint. He is a Mormon and is a declared candidate for president. Listen now. Are we feeding the phone, sir? Listen now to the sound of the very tolerant and embracing of difference, Al Sharpton.
And as for the one Mormon running for office, those that really believe in God will defeat him anyway, so don't worry about that. That's a temporary... That's a temporary situation.
So there you go. So if you had any doubts that Al Sharpton is a very open-minded man willing to embrace those who differ from himself, that should be a proof right there.
That's good to know. So noted.
He really is a lantern to follow. He's a beacon of tolerance. So
I'm not touching the story in any way, shape, or form.
Fantastic. Well, I will. I'll do it for all of us then. Lisa Goddard, enjoy the rest of your day. We will talk to you soon, sister.
All right. See ya.
There you go, Lisa Goddard on the hill. Fantastic. Let's play that once more, just so I can amuse myself.
And as for the one Mormon running for office, those that really believe in God will defeat him anyway, so don't worry about
Thanks,
that.
Al
That's
Sharpton.
A temporary.
God bless Al Sharpton.
That's a temporary situation.
Well, there you go. That's what would we do without him to show us the way to tolerance and diversity? Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Tim Riley around the corner with the AM 970 Noon News Hour. Later on, we will have more stories about people who... I don't even know how to phrase this sentence. Stories about people whom you should be glad you are not. That doesn't sound like it could possibly be
right.
I don't even know how to say imbroglio. Well, whatever. Take a break. Back after this. This is the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, the real reason you are here today, he is your president, your prophet, seer, and your revelator.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Clean, this is Tim Riley.
Uh-oh, what's going to happen now? The governor... Governor Kulikowski has signed legislation into law effective this morning that would recognize same-sex unions as domestic partnerships and ban discrimination against gays and lesbians.
God, the whole world's about to shift on its axis.
Well, we know what happened to Massachusetts. What did happen to Massachusetts?
Apparently they...
And Vermont. And New Hampshire.
Apparently they don't exist anymore. You drive... Like, if you fly over those sections of the country, it's just... It's like Manchester in 28 Days Later. It's just a smoking ruin with acrid black smoke on the horizon.
That's horrendous.
Yes.
Well, in Oregon, a same-sex couple will register with their county to enter a domestic partnership contract, which would give them all the state benefits of marriage. Now, as far as the federal government goes, you're still a second-class citizen, and it will continue to be taxation without representation. But at least statewide, you do get a few rights. So that begins in January.
And I hate to... Okay, for the 100th time, and I'm sorry to whoever it is that emailed me this question. We've gotten this question like 9,000 times. And I swear to God, every time we answer it, I then forget the answer. So, for everybody gather around the wireless. We're going to answer this question. We're going to answer this question one final time. And then we're all going to write, it's like in Memento, we're all going to tattoo the answer on our thorax. So that when we look in the mirror, we will know, and we won't have to ask this anymore. Rick, this email says, I remember there being two bills proposed. One was same-sex unions. The other was about homosexuality being a protected class. The same-sex union thing just got signed into law, right?
Right. But then there's the second bill.
What is the status of
which
the other?
Which is Senate Bill 2, which was also signed. So, one was for domestic partnerships, and the other was to ban discrimination against gays and lesbians.
So what
happened signed.
Okay, so they are both now the law of Oregon.
Yep, they go into effect next January.
In your face. Clearly we're all doomed.
Yeah, they're two different things.
We need some sort of a we're all doomed sounder to play every time somebody's given a right. All right. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
So that's that. So if you want to follow this further, in due time you should see an account. Anyway.
As we're following the decline of Western civilization.
And you need a will. Everyone should have a will anyway.
Man, can I just tell you this? That's one of those things that I keep putting off. I just don't. Well, first of all, I have nothing to leave anyone, just my collection of Motley Crue CDs. But now, does a will cover, suddenly we become the Bruce Williams Show. Tiger, did you have a lawyer? Now, the will, I asked Tim Riley, who is not a lawyer.
Tim, who has a will?
Okay, now, does that cover, like, don't keep me on some respirator for the rest of my freaking life if I get hit in the head or something?
It is separate, but it is part of it.
Okay.
It is a separate form.
Right.
Because that's really the thing that I...
There's a checklist of what you want and what you don't want.
All right.
How you want your remains disposed of, who gets your remains.
All right.
Can I? I want to demand that my remains be given to some random person who doesn't know me.
And the best part of a will is you can ban certain people.
Is that true?
Oh, I have.
Wait, hold on now. Inquiring minds want to know more. When you say ban, what do you mean? And when you say
by
people,
having any rights to your estate?
Oh, really? So you can say like my estate and any and all monies that I may have will be distributed equally, except for Janice, my correct sister, who will get nothing.
Correct.
That's fantastic. Really?
Oh, it feels so good.
I'm doing that like this week. Hold on, note to self. That's the you've made the decision for me. Because I keep putting it off because it's like, well, what do I care?
Well, everyone should have one.
I'm doing that this week.
Will. Also included, you can do something about pets. What happens to your pets? Who gets those?
Oh, that is true. Because
it's very important. A lot of people don't think about this.
No, because God forbid something like a meteorite that you fall, you kills Lara and I. What's going to happen to little Max?
Exactly.
All right. Get Will. Exclude family.
As a matter of fact, CBS has something on their website. You can do one for free.
Really?
You don't need a lawyer to put together a will.
Is that true? You don't need a lawyer?
No, you do not.
So you is that? Can I do that through that Ike Portland thing, that whatever?
Yeah, do that.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. You don't need a lawyer to put together a will. They want to suck as much money out of you as you can and say, you know, you need a lawyer, but you don't.
Is there any problem CBS can't solve for me, Tim Riley? They've made me a better person. They've made me more tolerant. They're apparently, this new test is going to teach me not to hit the reply all button on an email so that I don't send Les Moonves something about, like, athlete's foot. And now they're going to help me prepare a will so that I can exclude a lot of family members.
Yeah,
and
you can name names.
Oh, that is so great. I got a whole list of people that I'm going to keep from, man, I'm going to tell my wife to do the same thing, that crazy the nutcase
everybody
family.
Everybody should have a will.
Okay, I'm all over that. All right.
Even if you don't have anything at the present time.
Fantastic.
And let somebody know where it is.
All right. And is it? No, you just put it like in a safety deposit box.
You
can they open that after you die?
No. Well, I have mine in a safety deposit box, and I have my another copy in a secret briefcase hidden in a secret place. If the safety deposit box cannot be granted access, say if I die on a weekend or something.
So you have that whole you have that thing where they pull out a book on the shelf, and they're like, if the bookcase turns and you slide down a pole, mm-hmm, and like, here he is, Tim Riley's. Now, but when you die, here's a question. If you have, this really suddenly has become Tim.
Now, keep in mind, I'm not a lawyer. I'm just citing my own personal
A layman's
experience.
Now, in your layman's experience, if you have a safety deposit box, and let's say it is yours and yours alone, mm-hmm, when you die, does the bank open that?
That's a good question.
Like
I think some survivors can.
Interesting. I wonder.
I mean, when you set up for your safety deposit box, there must be there's a hit list there. Who else has that?
A hit list. Let's call it something else.
Okay.
A hit list is what I had when I was 15 and angry. Hey, if you work for a bank, I'm looking in your direction, Scott Daly. I don't know. I'd be curious to know that. If you, like, let's say if I had no friends or family or loved ones, if I was totally alone and just neglected and
to be buried in a pauper's grave.
Totally. Right behind Shawshank, which is a big wooden plaque. Just a big wooden plank right above my head. If you have a safety deposit box, and you have no survivors, no friends, family, loved ones, what happens to that? Who do they open it after you die? Do they open it at a certain point when the money for it runs out? Who gets whatever's inside? These are things I would like the answers to, just out of my own curiosity. All right, fantastic. My wife and I are going to that's going to be our weekend project. We're going to create wills.
Yes, all right.
Fantastic. So there you go, kids. Create a will today and exclude people you don't like.
Right, exactly.
I am going to say that my remains have to be taken into the four corners of the earth. I should totally mandate that in my will. That like my left foot has to be buried in like Swaziland. And then the rest is just left on a street corner for children to play with. Here's Tim Riley.
So does that answer all questions?
It really does. It's a good day to be alive. God damn, Oregon is great. So those are both laws as of now.
Yeah.
In your face, everybody. Yeah, that's right. Suck on that.
Yeah, so if you're a same-sex couple, you'll be able to leave things.
Excellent.
So I should say you can leave things to your partner right now if it's in your will. But automatically, when this new law goes into effect, if you're registered, then your partner will automatically get those.
So you get treated as though, as regular married couples have been for years,
right,
as different sex married. Okay.
Here in the States. But the federal government will continue to do nothing for you.
So now if you... But Okay, but so but you want to have the really has just become this has become like the Barry Farber show or whatever the hell that thing is. All right, final question. But then so if you move to some other less worthy, to some redder state, the will still has effect, which is probably why you want to have it.
Correct.
Because the states, like as most of the other states, will just tell you to pound sand. Mm-hmm. Like Utah will tell you to get bent.
All right.
It's good to know that the federal government, which I support with my tax dollars, thanks so much, continues to lag like decades behind Oregon.
And private industry. I mean, CBS, you have more rights than the federal government gives you.
It really is true. Well, in Oregon, I mean, it's not. I mean, it's gay rights, it's assisted suicide, it's medical marijuana, it's all of that stuff. None of which I think the federal government recognizes yet. Seriously, right. What is their problem? I mean, come on, man. For the love of sweet zombie Jesus, I wish they'd get with the program back there.
Their problem is white people keep breeding.
That's what I'm going to do. My first act as president, I'm going to put like a... We're going to do like a full-on thing like they have in China, except it's just going to be on white people. A ban on the number of white people that we are allowed to have.
That would solve all the problems in this country.
That really is. That's the immigration law we ought to have right here. Now, everybody can come in except you, Whitey. You must remain at the border and wait your turn. All right. Well, you know what would make this country a whole lot better? And I'm just speaking now academically. I am just speaking now just academically. This is my observation. The first thing that would make this country a whole lot better is if just a big, huge wave of a really virulent form of cancer would just sweep the families of those who work in Congress. And again, I'm not wishing for that to happen. Of course, I wish everybody in Congress and all of their families a long and healthy life. I'm just saying nobody in Congress is ever going to change anything until it actually affects them. And of course, it's like the healthcare problem. You know, of course they don't have any motivation to fix the health. You know, why? Because people in Congress have got freaking healthcare. Until like your grandmother can't get medical marijuana, for which, by the way, and this is the last thing I'm going to say, and then we'll move on to other news. You know, they just, there was a big study the other day that they found some new form of medical marijuana, which you use, it's like an atomizer that you use, which is like one of those little spritzy things that the perfume used to come in the 50s. So you no longer even have to smoke medical marijuana. It can now be atomized, which overcomes the final idiot objection that the DEA always had to, which is, well, we're not going to advocate any sort of medicine that has to be smoked, because what about the cancer and the lungs and the tar and the blackening of your alveoli? As though that matters to somebody who's got a tumor the size of a squash inside of his head. But now they've got atomized medical marijuana, too. So, really, the federal government just lags so far behind Oregon and all the states on all of these things. So, anyway, so big ups to Oregon. It's a good day to be an Oregonian.
It is.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. We should call up other states at random and just snicker at them and then hang up the phone. Call like Georgia. You know what I mean? It's like, hello, this is Georgia. Hi, we're in Oregon. F you. Bam. And just hang up the phone.
I like that. How about Montana?
I don't think they have phones there yet. I think we'll have to just send some sort of, just send a carrier pigeon. We'll have to send the Pony Express over there. All right, fantastic. Here's Tim Riley.
So let's talk about some Vancouver criminals. They're the best kind. Police say they foiled the Vancouver man's plot to have his ex-wife murdered. Investigators say Jean Conco's ex-husband tried on three occasions to hire hitmen to kill her. So I guess they do have hitmen in Vancouver. They don't charge that much, though. They arrested 47-year-old Dino Constance Monday and charged him with solicitation to commit murder. There are a lot of signs I ignored. It was somebody else's fault, said the wife. Court documents detail the graphic manual in which Dino allegedly wanted her dead. Dino's accused of telling one of the hitmen to drink her with heroin and then drown her in the toilet.
Wait, let's... Okay, who was trying to hire the hitman?
Dino.
To kill who?
His wife. Allegedly.
Allegedly. Yeah. And this is in Vancouver?
Yeah.
I guess you can't use your Oregon Trail card for that.
No.
You can use whatever the Washington... You can totally say, can I pay for this with food stamps? Drug her with heroin?
Mm-hmm. And then drown her in the toilet.
Let me ask you this, and this is simply... This maybe is a more prosaic question than the story really warrants, but... If you're so annoyed at someone that you want them drowned in a toilet, why do you even want them drugged beforehand? I mean, really, unless it's for ease of drowning.
Maybe she has good breath control.
Maybe. That's true. No gag.
Give an Olympic singer.
Lots of breath control and no gag reflex. I guess so. Or maybe, again, maybe it's just to make things easier for the hitman. All right. He specified that it had to be heroin.
Yeah. Well, another hitman was reportedly offered $5,000 to beat her and another $5,000 if she died.
this is sort of like, is this like an incentive program?
They sort of, now look, the beating is going to cost you an extra $5,000. But with that does come a bludgeoning and the breaking of one or more bones in the lower 30% of the body. We find that this is our most popular package. Now, we've got the no-frills package. That is $3,500. And for the no-frills package, we simply bludgeon her with a brick and leave her body to be discovered by local animals. All right.
Well, what about that other nutty guy who ran over his wife with the Lincoln Navigator?
Right, right.
Well, she's picking flowers.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, was she dead?
Yeah, she's dead.
And the last thought was a happy one.
Well, that was from the golf course conversation yesterday.
Oh, that's right. That was the Waverly.
Yeah.
The Waverly. What is going on at Vancouver? No, that was in Vancouver, though. That was
no,
in the...
I have another Vancouver story, though.
Jesus, this whole part of the country is just going crazy. All right.
Police are searching for a man, police of Vancouver, who followed two girls from a park to their home and left them an explicit movie of himself. The man approached two little girls at Lizer Crest Park in central Vancouver. After following them to their home, police said the man made provocative requests of a sexual nature to the girls. At some point, the man entered the girls' home, found a digital camera, and took explicit movies of himself before leaving. The man also recently plucked his eyebrows.
I love that. That's fantastic. It really? Is that part of the story?
Yeah.
Where's that story from?
It's from K2.
K2, God bless you for putting in all the salient details. He didn't sort of trim his eyebrows or shave them.
He actually plucked them
sort of Pink Floyd the Wall style.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he did that before he took the movies. Because that'd be...
I believe it was before, yes.
That'd be double.
He wanted more of a matinee look.
He wanted to look like that guy who opened for Carlin on Friday. That'd be disturbing. I mean, you're sitting there looking through your camera. Where are those pictures of my dog? And then suddenly it's just a close-up of a guy's junk. That's no good. All right, here's Tim Riley.
So let's talk about that bank robbery yesterday in Clackamas. The one at 82nd and Southeast Johnson Creek. It was a B of A.
Southeast Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, apparently, Bruce David Connor of Portland drove his red Cadillac into a bank robber running for the Bank of America. The collision knocked the bank robber to the pavement and slowed him down. This guy was on a bike and robbed a bank. The FBI said the man demanded cash from the tellers minutes earlier, then ran from the scene on foot. He eventually recovered from the collision and hopped onto a bike. Deputies said they responded to the alleged robbery, and the man was found riding a bicycle on Southeast Cornwell Road, one block north of the bank. They arrested him without incident. They credited the guy in the Cadillac for slowing down the robber by trying to hit him, but Connor said he was just doing his duty.
Fantastic. That guy is pretty impressive. He was hit by, what, a Cadillac?
Cadillac, yeah.
That's a big car.
It is a big car.
Scotty drives one of those. I've seen it. It's a behemoth. Hit by that, and he was able, and you can spare me the comments about how he was hit by a Cadillac, and yet he still was able to bicycle. And I do not bicycle and have not been hit by a Cadillac. He was motivated, though. He had the impetus of being a bank robber.
Meanwhile, a 35-year-old candy man has been arrested after allegedly was caught in the act of tagging. He's 35 years old. Grow up. Apparently, Jamie Pico was walking from a building with blue spray paint in his right hand, and there was reportedly fresh graffiti in blue spray paint on the side of the building. Pico then began to cry and admitted to tagging the building.
Oh, come
he
on.
Said he needed some place to do his art.
Buy some paper, for the love of...
Okay. Oh, go to an art school. Isn't it a big art college downtown?
Really?
And take a bus from Canby and come to Portland.
And
granted, there are no big art colleges in Canby. But there are other avenues you can explore for your creative side.
Just make a crop circle or something. I mean, that's what you could do in Canby. For the love of sweet Jesus. He started to cry. Come on.
I don't believe this was gang related. Because he's too old for a gang. He's 35 years old.
Yeah, what's his name?
His name is Jamie Pico.
Yeah. All right. 35 years old. There's no crying and tagging. For the love of sweet Christ, stop that. I wonder if cops just have contempt for people who cry. I mean, I'm not saying that you should be a criminal. It's not a life path you should be choosing. But, I mean, I wonder if you're a cop and you especially a guy who's a nonviolent offender like this, you get some guy who's tagging, you there, stop tagging. I wonder if cops are tempted just to give that guy just a little bit of a rubber hosing. You know what I mean? Just to give him a little bit of a beating, just toughen him up a little bit. You know, somebody, what is that, and I'm not advocating that you engage in, you know, putting up graffito, because that's wrong. But there is that tagging downtown, and I've seen this a few times now. And it's, what is that building? There's some building downtown. It's like on 4th and about... No, it's actually further up. It's sort of by Powell's. But and it says loser, but it's like at the absolute top of this... And first of all, why would you write that? What kind of self-esteem did you have in your tag or your masterpiece or something, loser? But it's right at the very top of a building, and you can tell what the guy did is he went all the way to the top, went out of the roof, and then, like, hung himself over the side and spray-painted these huge balloon letters that said loser. It's pretty impressive, actually. And that's the thing, that's what I'll admit about tagging that nobody ever admits, is that some of it is pretty damn impressive. Not only does it look cool... Again, I'm not saying
it's in some dangerous location.
That's the other
somebody
thing.
Dangling over traffic on a bridge. How come nobody saw that? Well, it was impressive.
I see. I wonder that too. Has anybody ever seen tagging being done?
And how about the Vista Ridge Tunnel? There are cars going through there all the time.
It really does boggle the mind, actually. So there's three things. One, that some of it looks great. You know what especially looks great is some of that tagging on. Don't tag. There's my little disclaimer. On the sides of trains, some of it on the sides of train cars looks really cool. It's like the big. It's like some of that welcome back Cotter graffiti. Secondly, yes, it's pretty impressive that those guys like, and they'll like on those freeway overpass signs and stuff. It's like, there's no way you get my ass
out
there.
How do you do it?
I don't know. And thirdly, it is amazing that no one ever spots that. I mean, if you're driving along and you see a guy, whatever, on the I-5, you know, whatever, and he's hanging off and he's sort of bungeeing himself to his son, he's doing, you think that somebody would call the cops and they would bust the guy. No one ever gets caught doing any of that really impressive graffiti. It is kind of neat. Don't do it. But I'm just saying it is kind of admirable in a sort of perverse sense. All right.
Well, here's something that's just wrong. You fight for your country, allegedly, in Iraq, and come back and find yourself demoted. Police Chief Bill Middleton of Sherwood has filed a labor complaint alleging that officials in this picturesque Portland suburb demoted him following his latest stint with the Army Reserves, which get no respect from anybody. Middleton, who spent much of the late year interrogating captured insurgents and foreign fighters in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Guantanamo, is keeping his job title and pay, but must report to somebody new, a public safety director, a position created while he was away.
I thought that was illegal. I didn't think you could demote people while they were in the military.
So we'll see what happens with this.
Wait, so is he, but you said he's a National Guard guy? Or
yeah, the Army Reserves.
Although that's sort of a relative thing now. National Guard Reserve doesn't really mean what it used to mean.
No.
I'm old enough to remember those commercials, or young enough, depending on how you look at it. Those commercials that played.
But they reserve the right to send you home when they feel like it.
Yes, yes.
From dangerous locations. That's what that means.
That's totally what we reserve the right to keep you forever and to put you in front of bullets going 1,000 miles an hour. I remember those commercials that the U.S. The National Guard and Navy Reserve or whatever they were, 1 weekend a month or 1 day a month and like a couple of week of 1 week a year, whatever the hell it was. It's not that way anymore. Now that you're over there, like in 140 degree sand, fighting off spiders the size of dinner plates for like 18 months. So, yeah, think twice. I really do wonder, just like I wonder who these people are that are signing the Paris Hilton petition to get her out of jail or to keep her out of jail, whatever, I really do wonder who it is that's actually proactively signing up for the military now. I mean, I'm not trying to pass judgment. It just seems like a poor choice.
I have seen a commercial with the... Well, a person might be considered a minority in some places, but
it's CBS Radio.
Yes. It shows them in their not-so-pleasant neighborhood thinking, should I or shouldn't I?
Now, is this a man of Latin or perhaps...
Yes.
At first,
I thought it was a joke from, like, Saturday Night Live.
Right.
But it is serious.
Like, he's really having to ponder the big upside.
And it is the thing to do.
It's 43 or something is the new age. Like, it used to be if you were 25.
Yeah.
They just turned, if you were 20, I think you can actually now, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure you actually now can also have been convicted of crimes and join the military, which they didn't used to, that didn't used to be the case. I'm pretty sure you can now actually have, like, criminal convictions on your record and join the military. So I really, you know, that's a reality show that somebody ought to do. That is really a reality show. Is follow like some group of dudes as they weigh the pros and cons of joining the military at this point. Because I'm not even sure, and again, I don't really know, but I'm not even really sure that business of, because they used to frame it as like, join the military and don't really do a whole lot and we'll pay for all of your college. And that's not really so much the case anymore. Because I mean, you know, because my brother was in the Marines just before Iraq happened. And so, you know, and they still weren't giving him a whole lot. I mean, they still didn't pay for all of his college. And he, you know, and he did like the full boat. So, you know, all right. Well, apparently it's the hip thing with the kids to join the military, I guess, somewhere. So.
They were offering 5 iTunes downloads at one point, but I don't know if they...
And a free shirt.
Oh, the T-shirt was good, yeah.
A free shirt and a first-person shooting game. Mm-hmm. All right.
So let's go on to other things around this great nation. As the cleanup continues, the president has been touring the town of Greensburg, Kansas.
Oh, what used to be
what
Greensburg,
is there to tour?
Kansas?
I know. Just a rebel. Just watch where you walk. Otherwise, you got to step on a nail and end up with a tetanus shot.
Is he looking for piles of rubble to stand on?
No, I have no idea what this is, but the out cue is laughter fades.
Okay.
All right.
So ladies and gentlemen, some rib-tickling humor from Kansas.
All right. Let's find out what this is.
Rosie O'Donnell. She's backing up. See, that's a joke.
I got on one of those big trucks.
Fantastic. Well done. All right. That's.
Ladies, you want to hear that again?
Let's play that again. Since it took us like an hour to download it from the Metro News server, we might as well get the mileage out of it.
He's making folks laugh, apparently, by saying something. So let's try to figure out exactly what he said. He got on some big trick and cranked her up.
I think that's just one of those things where people laugh because he's the president, and they assume that either, like, they have to, one of two things. It's like a Tony Soprano laugh, where they laugh because they're afraid he'll have them killed or beaten in Guantanamo otherwise. Or B, they laugh because he said something in a tone of voice indicating that it was a joke. And even though they didn't get it or find it funny, they're assuming it was a joke and maybe they just weren't quite smart enough to catch the humor, so they just laughed as like a, I'll take that joke home and work on it later in my study and maybe I'll get it.
Kind of like the way you talk to the Queen.
Exactly. Oh, boy. Boy, man. Every time I see that picture of her, it just makes me feel all warm inside. She hates his ass. She just despises him. I really do, you know, and you know that they still think of us as the colonies. You know it's true. You know that the Queen looks at stupid Yanks can't run their own country.
Well, it says here that Queen Elizabeth flashes her wit on her last day in the U.S. So somebody took her out back and tried to teach her a joke or two. So we'll find out exactly what she said here.
All right. Mr. President, I raise my glass to you and to Mrs. Bush, to the friendship between our two countries, and to the health, freedom, prosperity, and happiness of the people of the United States of America.
That is
funny. Wit.
That is why that's hilarious. Bada bing. I don't know. Is that a joke?
It says here, the Queen flashes her wit. That was apparently her wit.
That's sad. And she's from the country they invented humor.
Let's see.
Huh. Maybe when Eddie Izzard left, he just took all the funny with him. Rick, there is some sort of wonderful irony, says this email, about a massive Cadillac in Clackamas intentionally smashing into a bicyclist and receiving a commendation. If it was slightly farther north, there would be protests and anger about a motorist striking a bicycle, no matter what the rider was doing. In Clackamas, they probably have monuments to things like this. White-painted chain-down bumpers with signs that say, here is where an SUV got its fender dented by a bicyclist. That really is true. Like it is sort of a reversal of culture up there. All right. Oh, we should probably break here. It's 26. Do we have more wit from the Queen?
I'm downloading some now. Hopefully, this will be funnier than the first one.
Okay. Well, should we break or should we wait and should I amuse the audience with a couple jocular emails?
Oh, we're ready to go now.
All right. Maybe this will be hilarious. I'm sure.
Here is more of the royal wit as offered at a dinner toast.
Mr. President, I wondered whether I should start this Tuesday when I was young.
That's hilarious. Can't hear anything.
I can't top that one.
Okay.
It's funny.
Your Majesty, can you tell that beep-beep joke again? It's hilarious. It's a rib tickler. Yeah, the beep-beep joke is really her, take my wife, please. Okay, let's take a break here. We'll come back after this. It's the Rick Emerson Show. We continue with Tim Riley around the corner, the AM 970 Noon News Hour.
503-733-2970. You stay right there, ladies and gentlemen. It's AM 970, Solid State Radio. It's Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Rick, this email says, I didn't want my will to risk being contested, so rather than leave my family out, I left the a-holes $1 and some socks. Fantastic. So my grandmother, who's a horrible person, so my grandmother did to my dad and my uncle, left them a dollar each. Thanks for that. Thanks. I don't even know where the rest of the money went now that I think about it. What the hell did my grandmother do with that money? I don't know.
That's probably just donated it to the church.
No. Well, I can tell you she didn't. I can tell you that my grandmother did not do that. You know what W.C. Fields did? This is probably what my grandmother did. W.C. Fields, a very famous Hollywood star, had amassed a substantial fortune by the time he died. And W.C. Fields, this is a true story, and this is probably what all the members of my family did of that generation. W.C. Fields, in his will, specified that his money should go to the founding of a school for, and I'm quoting now from his will, founding of a school for, quote, good little white boys and girls.
That sounds good.
No, but then there was a follow-up, though. The founding of a school for, quote, good little white boys and girls, where no religion of any kind was to be preached or tolerated, end quote. So, there you go. That's W.C. Fields. Well, yeah, my grandmother, who was a horrible crone of a woman, left my dad and his brother a dollar each. Now that I think about it, I'm not really sure where the rest of the money went. Didn't go to me. Well, screw her. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, she's long gone.
Yeah, it really is true, and painfully so.
Well, 60% of Americans surveyed support setting a timetable for withdrawing U.S. troops out of Iraq. That, according to a USA Today Gallup poll, which also said most Americans expect more terrorist attacks than the U.S., despite favoring the pullout, 68% of those asked predict civil war in Iraq if the U.S. forces withdraw next year.
They predict civil war will happen.
Yeah.
At some point in the future.
But things are going well right there.
Civil war will happen. Mm-hmm. All right. Fantastic.
Oregon Senator Gordon Smith believes more of his fellow Republicans will support a troop pullout before long.
Many of them will simply change their votes, and Chuck Hagel and I will not be the only ones calling on the president to put the troops in a new place.
It is very telling, by the way, that when the GOP did that debate seven, eight, nine, 10 days ago, that they only mentioned George W. Bush. His name came up once.
Yes.
They mentioned Ronald Reagan 17 times. They mentioned George Bush once. That is just, that guy has the death stink on him. Mm-hmm. That guy has, George Bush has just the loser stench on him that is, it's strong like anchovies left in the sun all summer.
All right. So much so they have to go to a dead president.
Totally. That's the thing. They have to go back 20 years so they can find a president they're not ashamed to be identified with. All right.
So, Senator Gordon Smith says Iraq must take the lead in arriving at a political solution there.
There is not a military solution in Iraq. There is only a political solution, and that is the duty of the Iraqi government. And as we speak, as our kids are still fighting and dying, they're preparing to go on vacation without even passing an oil revenue sharing law.
I think he's all horrified by it now. He's all offended by the war now that it might cost him politically. Now it's a mistake. Can't listen to this. Rick, this email, this is from Scott Daly. We have an answer to the safety deposit box question.
Uh-huh. Okay.
This is from Scott Daly, who is an employee of what we will call a large banking company.
Well, they all are. They're like two or three.
A large banking firm. I don't wish to identify the, I don't know if we've ever identified the bank he works for or not, but he works for a large banking firm.
Loved by its depositors.
Yes. He says, Rick, if you die with no next of kin and no instructions on what to do with your safety deposit contents, we literally drill open the box. Oh, that's so cool.
Does Scott do it personally?
Totally. He's in
May I ask for Scott Daly to drill holes in my safe deposit box upon my death?
Totally caper style. He's in there with goggles at midnight, like with Andre Brower, drilling it open.
And like Geraldo, there's nothing in there.
He said, we literally drill open the box, empty the contents into another new locked box.
Oh, that sounds cool.
A locked box. And
an American flag.
And then they get shipped away to a faraway storage facility where it's never opened, much like Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, that is good.
So you know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere there is a whole huge, massive storehouse with unopened contents of safety deposit boxes.
Maybe
from decades and decades worth of it. I mean, somewhere there's a big building.
Maybe it's a salt mine like where Johnny Carson just keeps the Tonight Show video tapes.
In Colorado. Mm-hmm. Yeah, drilled into the side of the whatever. That's where the Mormon church keeps all their genealogical records.
Oh.
It's like a mile underground carved into a whole thing of solid granite that's like climate and temperature controlled or whatever. That's, and the government stores about a bunch of like missiles and crap there too.
All right. Pack rats.
Let's get this WCU field call, Fields call, and then we'll move on. Hi, hello.
Hello, Rick.
Hi.
I swear to God, I read this as fact. Who knows if it's true or not, but
I read once that
WC Fields had a recurring dream that he was in some town where he didn't know where he was and nobody knew who he was, and he had no money and he had no way to get around. So while he was touring around the country doing various gigs and whatnot, every time he'd stop in a small town, he would open a bank account and deposit some amount of money, maybe $10, maybe $1,000, whatever. But true to his nature, he always opened these bank accounts under a pseudonym. So upon his death, he couldn't possibly remember where all these towns were or where the accounts were. And so today there's probably millions of dollars in the American banking system that W.C. Fields deposited.
Here's the thing. I don't even care if that's true. It's going to go into my memory bank, and I'm going to start reciting that as though it were a fact. That's an anecdote that I'm going to recite as though it were the gospel honest truth.
I do it.
Yeah. Well done. Thank you. You have a career in journalism at CBS Radio ahead of you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. That is really great. I love stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just the idea that there's a big, it's like, I think the fourth or the fifth Harry Potter book, there's some warehouse where it's just, it's like that hidden, the room of requirement or whatever it is, that room that Harry conjures up, and it's like whatever you need is in the room, and never mind, just talking to nobody. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, Dick Cheney paid a surprise visit to the happy Iraqis today. He told reporters that the Iraqis understand the need to move forward.
Any undue delay would be difficult to explain. And that...
going to suck the marrow out of your bones.
Approach these issues with all deliberate dispatch.
Well, can I shrink the head of your grandmother?
That's better the way I was going to go. Mine was going to be, can I lick your baby? That was my joke. Yours is funnier, though, as always. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, during this surprise visit, Cheney met with the reporters to discuss the progress being made. He said the Iraqis need to start working together to cut down on the so-called violence between different factions.
They believe the situation has gotten better. They cite specifically the statistics on sectarian violence, Sunni on Shia, and Shia on Sunni violence, that they think is down fairly dramatically.
Shia on Sunni violence? Is that a new phrase that we're really using now?
Yep.
I like a violence between... Violence from some people on other people is worse than just violence by people against people like themselves. That statement made no sense. You know what I'm talking about, though.
Yeah.
Anytime you're using the phrase blank-on-blank violence, I love the idea that somehow violence is more okay if it's against somebody who looks like you. If it's, you know, as long as it's good old-fashioned white-on-white violence, there's nothing wrong with that. Here's Tim Riley.
Say, if you go to ParisHilton.com, you'll find somebody asking for signatures to present to Governor Schwarzenegger requesting a pardon for Hilton. A spokesman for the governor, Ellen McNear, says Hilton has not yet exhausted all her legal options.
And even then, the governor rarely inserts himself in a case of this nature.
What?
And even then, the governor rarely inserts himself in a case of this nature.
Yeah, well, no.
For the governor.
No, he's not retarded. He's not going to weigh into that. Arnold Schwarzenegger knows that everybody's on the right side of this. The best thing he could possibly do is to be known as the governor that presided over Paris Hilton being stuck in the pokey and being beaten savagely at lunchtime by big butch inmates. Fantastic.
Hello, sports fans. A New York Mets fan is suing the team after she said a drink fell on top of her and broke her back at Shea Stadium during opening day. The attorney for 58-year-old Ellen Massey, Stephen Hoffman, said beer vendors at Shea Stadium should have cut off the fan who crushed her because of the stadium's policy of alcohol non-management.
They tell you what's not allowed and what they're not going to do. They say people shouldn't
drink outside on the sidewalks. They shouldn't have drunk drinking in the parking lot. Meanwhile, they have tailgate parties where people are encouraged to drink. Thousands of people are drinking before they come in.
It's got to be stopped.
Yeah, whatever.
Is this one of those things where he fell from an upper balcony down onto her?
Well, let's see.
I'm afraid of that every time I go to a show.
The alleged drunk was sitting near Massey in the upper deck of the stadium when he fell on her. So he was above her.
Yeah, but it sounds like he was sitting on the same level. It sounds like he was sitting next to her.
It says sitting near her in the upper deck. She claims the fan was falling down drunk and was still able to buy beer. It broke one of her vertebrae and she needed to have two rods put in her back.
It sounds like, I'm not laughing at the rod, I'm just saying it sounds like she's either real small or he's real big or quite possibly both.
Mm-hmm.
And there must have been some other inanimate object in the mix, like a chair or something. Well, every so often, like at the Tacoma Dome, you'll hear this like once a year or so where some idiot like up in the balcony of the Tacoma Dome is really drunk and is like leaning way forward, you know, so he can like try to, you know, so he can get an extra good look at Shakira. And he just plummets right off right over the railing and then falls on some poor sods who are down below on a lower level just trying to enjoy the show. Every time I go to a show in a big venue like that, I always look up and I'm always afraid that there's some guy up in the balcony who's just going to plunge down on top of me. I wasn't prepared. This is Andy. Andy in Gresham. Hello, sir.
Hey.
Hey.
Why is it every time you guys play a Dick Cheney sounder of some kind, I think of hamster porn, you know, hot rodent on rodent action? That's just weird, isn't it?
That you're thinking in that.
That really is weird.
Oh, that such pornography exists.
That really is the very definition of weird.
Yeah, so I
when
mean,
when we played Dick Cheney sounders, you think of hamster porn.
Yes. His voice. I mean, it's just weird.
Any undue delay
that's something that, you know, the Crypt Keeper voice.
They believe the situation has gotten better.
I guess what I'm trying to get out here is,
I guess I should just trademark this right now and, you know, get it out on the internet before somebody else does.
Do you mean the joke or hamster porn?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. Thanks so much.
Bye.
All right.
Any undue delay would...
Andy!
They believe the situation has gotten better.
Yeah, I think he's, I don't know what that guy's all about. Okay. Thanks, Scotty. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, it surely wasn't what CBS dreamed about when Katie Couric was hired. The CBS Evening News last week recorded its smallest audience in 20 years. It didn't help that the average of 6.05 million viewers came at the beginning of the important May rating sweeps. Meanwhile, ABC's World News Tonight recorded its widest advantage of viewership, and that was over the NBC Nightly News. World News averaged 8.1 million viewers, NBC's Nightly News 7.5, and CBS?
Oh,
4.3.
We're sorry.
These are worrisome numbers.
Yeah, are you saying that as CBS? Is that a quote, or are you saying that as you, as a CBS employee?
Well, that is what it's deemed by people in the industry.
And by us in this room, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Those are worrisome. Please don't fire us. Let's just say, I mean, let's just come out and say what needs to be said, is that people trust the news, and I'm speaking now of television news, and you know this is true. People trust the news when it comes from unattractive people.
All gray-haired men.
That's the thing.
And white men.
That's the thing. Americans, traditionally speaking, Americans gravitate towards leathery-faced old white guys for their news. I don't know why.
White guys with no hair.
They're just guys, you know, and Americans, I don't know what it is, man. Americans just won't accept news from people unless you look like William Holden in Network. Unless you just look like Howard Beale, Americans don't really want to watch you giving the news. I don't know why that is, but it does. The anecdotal and empiric evidence both seem to suggest that that's the case. And if you're attractive, God help you. If you're attractive, no one will ever and that's Katie Couric's problem. I mean, really it is. She's a reasonably attractive woman, and so therefore people don't take her seriously giving the news. That's got to be it.
Maybe it's the revealing clothing she's wearing.
But that's what I'm saying. That's exactly my point. I'm not saying she can't give the news.
If she dressed like a waitress at IHOP, that might be...
Well, you know, that's what made Lynn Russell on Headline News such an anomaly. Although she did counter that. I mean, you know, like, the problem with Katie Couric is they spend all this time talking about what she's wearing and her makeup and her hair and whatever, and she's showing a whole lot of... I can't believe I'm saying this because it makes me sound like my grandmother. Yes! She's showing a lot of leg. Like she said, they're trying to get picked up for a hitchhiking on I-15. You can't do that and then simultaneously try to fill in the shoes of Howard K. Smith. It's just not going to work. So what she needs to do is stop wearing makeup, let her hair go to seed, try to grub up a little bit, and wear some sort of burlap bag. And then people might actually...
Or just like Little House on the Prairie. With one of those bonnets.
Wear a bonnet. Wear an ankle-length...
A little respectability.
Wear an ankle-length dress and don't show your wrists.
Chastity belt.
You know, I would watch... If you put Katie Couric in a chastity belt, I would watch...
Promote it?
Katie Couric. Tonight, Katie Couric delivers the news while wearing a chastity belt. I would completely watch that. I would watch that right now. Did you know...
Maybe we can suggest that at the CBS meeting.
Oh, we're not going to be there, are we? Is there a suggestion?
We should totally. Are there prizes for the best suggestion?
We should tell people. There's a CBS all-staff meeting happening today. All CBS Radio Portland staff have to be there. Now, it's happening, I won't say where, but it's happening at a local establishment that holds a lot of people, but there's a local place, everybody's gone, and it's every single employee of CBS Radio Portland, and it's a Q&A session, and it's a lot of, like, where is the company going? Like, a lot of those, but it is true.
I mentioned the word digital a lot, even though nobody knows what it actually means.
Say new media a lot. We are broaching out, and we are trying to cover all our bases in the new media, in this digital age of multicasting. And things, science and technology.
It's like, where do we find all this stuff?
I don't know. It's just, here, like I say, speaking for us, it's just the same crap we always do. There's really no, I think we just, it's the same crap, it's just delivered digitally. But one of the functions of this is one of the things about this all, the CBS Radio Portland all company meeting is that there is, I swear to God, there is like an anonymous little box they put up somewhere, or maybe it's a digital box. It's the box of tomorrow. It's part of the new media style Dropbox. But you can ask anonymous questions, which they say no one will ever know who the question came from, and that they will answer at this meeting commonly asked anonymous questions about CBS and its company and its policies and so forth. We should totally submit them. I guess it won't really be anonymous at this point. Do you believe that Katie Couric's nudes would do better if she did it wearing a chastity belt? Nude? Thank you. Signed, and then I'll just sign it. My wit has failed me. Signed, Marconi. We should totally do that.
I think it's a great idea.
Who wants to hear a fun fact about chastity belts?
Oh, I do.
All right. Did you know that they now make, I don't know what the actual term is, but it's like a polyurethane. It's like a hard plastic chastity belt so that you can wear it through airport security.
Oh, that is a good idea.
So there you go, kids. If you've been wanting to wear a chastity belt or wanting to get one for that special someone this Hanukkah, your prom night, dads, if you've been wanting to secure your daughter's genitals inside a chastity belt, but you're afraid she won't be able to take that trip to Disneyland, now you can do it. They do. They make an all plastic chastity belt. And I swear to God, I swear to you, it comes with a little special key that like the TSA can use at the airport if they really do feel like they need to take it off and give her a good inspecting. So there you go. There's your chastity belt fun fact for today. Put Katie Couric in one of those, that's like a 30 share, easy, right there. All right, here's Tim Riley.
American Idol update. It wasn't Saturday night, but the American Idol finalists were feeling the fever. The performance episode of the Fox show featured the four remaining contestants, each singing two songs of the Barry Gibb catalog. And despite Gibb being known for disco classics, it was Jordan Sparks' take on a ballad that got the highest marks of the evening.
You will see it because it's from the Playtone catalog. You cut that thing you do in Spanish. You sing these songs from the Playtone catalog.
Oh, the new director's cut is out on that, and it's much longer.
Really?
Yeah, I just read it this week.
McRib is back. McRib is freaking back.
The movie was...
Is that true?
Yes, it is.
How did I not know this?
You don't read the New York Sunday Times, that's why.
Oh, I'm so... Okay. La-di-da. I didn't think you'd have an answer for that, but apparently you do. Mr. Fancy reads the newspaper, man. Mr. Fancy, I get my news from New York on papyrus. Okay, fine. Jerk. All right.
It's delivered to my doorstep every Sunday.
Okay, fine. Yes, I know you're better than I am.
I get it at half price.
You keep rubbing it in.
If you live in the suburbs, you would have a newspaper delivered and not stolen from your doorstep on Sunday morning. I don't think you can do that in your neighborhood, so there's nothing you can really do.
No, can I just tell you this? Here's a fun fact about Southeast Represent. Here's a fun fact. Whenever I order something in the mail, I have it sent here. I don't have it sent to my house. That is a true story. I bought a T-shirt online the other day, and this was not a radio business at all. This was an entirely private purchase. It had nothing to do with the show. But I was some website, and like, would you like to buy a T-shirt? Sure, I do. You know, bam, bam, bam. I go through, and I was like, you know, billing address, you know, whatever, and it's like shipping address. And I thought for a second of it. 2040 Southwest First, yeah, care of Rick Emerson. No way do I ever have, you know, because they're my freaking shoes. These shoes that I'm wearing right here. These shoes, I sound like Alec Bowman. You see these shoes? These shoes are replacement shoes. Do you remember when I went to Seattle over the holidays and I bought some shoes at that store? And
business shoes.
I like these shoes quite a lot. These are called these are Dunham shoes. This is the dress shoe branch of the New Balance shoe company.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, I am a big fan of these shoes. But I bought these shoes in Seattle. They didn't have my size, and they're like, well, okay, you pay for them now. We'll send them to your house. They send them to my house, where they were then stolen off my porch.
That's too bad.
Seriously. So when they sent the replacement shoes, had them sent right here to CBS. Had them sent right here where Dave Zinn kept them safe. I don't have anything sent to my... If I ever get fired again, I'm going to be screwed. Presumably I would be home to get the package, but I'm never going to... I'll have nowhere safe for them to send goods and services through the mail. All right, that thing you do. When did that come out, that thing you do?
It just came up.
Oh, man, yeah. I'm going to look it up right now.
Door's about to come out, I should say.
All right, hold on. Have you pre-ordered?
I have not, no.
Okay, I'm totally pre-ordering that. You can do that through CD Game Exchange, by the way. Let's see. That thing you do. Because, you know, I have lamented. I have deliberately held off buying it on DVD because I was waiting for a special edition to come out.
This is it.
All right, hold on. We're looking. That is one of our very favorite movies here at the Rick Emerson Show. That thing you do. Two-disc special edition.
Told you.
Oh, my God.
You must have it.
It comes out tomorrow.
See, told you.
Wait, that can't be right.
No, if you listen to this program, we always have information like this.
Yeah, but it's usually made up. Let's see. What do we have here? Listen to this. Would you like... Who wants to... Oh, man. Oh, come on. This is so great. Listen to this. Okay, this is the That Thing You Do two-disc director's cut.
Mm-hmm.
Dolby 5.1 sound. Disc one is the theatrical feature. Then the director's cut.
Yes.
Plus commentary. Tom Everett Scott, Jonathan Shake, Steve Zahn, Ethan Embry, Liv Tyler. Oh, that is so... Tyler?
I barely knew her.
Disc two, The Making of That Thing You Do, The Story of the Wonders, the That Thing You Do reunion, a featurette called The Wonders Big in Japan.
It's the best day ever.
Making of That Thing You Do, The Thing You Do title song submissions, because you know it was a contest to write that song.
Yes, it was.
Come on. Oh, this is the best day of my life.
You learn a lot on this program.
Oh, you're being haughty now. You're just sitting back reading the Sunday Times. I'm looking over. Tim's just kicking back in his chair reading the Sunday New York Times now.
Oh, here it is. Here's the New York Times right up.
This is so great.
This will say a little bit more. Hang on.
So this is out now. It's in stock. It's available now. Oh, come on. This is so great. Okay, this is right here in the New York Times. Charlize Theron. Boy, does she look hot as balls in this movie. Just unbelievable. She is so beautiful in this movie. It's like she was made out of cotton candy. And I know that doesn't sound right, but you know what I mean. Just like she was made out of candy floss. Good God. Blah blah blah. Director's cut. Blah blah blah. Oh, this is so great. Two discs. 1998.
Yeah,
bam. I am getting that today. That is the best news. Thank you, Tim Riley.
That's just me doing my job.
Thank you, Del Paxton. We can just go home. The day has peaked. What else could we possibly have today to top that? I didn't even know that was the case. Without Tim Riley, you would be lost. Mm-hmm. All of it. We would have nothing.
No, nothing.
All right. Anywho. 503-733. That's great. That is just great. 503.
So why don't we just go home now? Because it can't get any better than
seriously,
this.
Seriously, I really...
the best of show.
I really am tempted just to pack it in and go buy that movie right now, take the rest of the day off, and go home and watch that. You know, my wife has been nagging me about going out somewhere tonight and eating and, like, doing something. You know what we're going to do instead? We're going to order a pizza and we're going to watch the, That Thing You Do.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, honey. That's what tonight is going to be. All right. Fantastic. It's 503-733-2970. Well, we should break here just so I can just get my head around this whole scenario so I can calm down a little bit.
All that was right. Too much, wasn't it?
Yes. I feel overwhelmed. Good times. Hey, by the way, there's now a petition online to make sure that Paris Hilton does her time. There is a Punish Paris petition going around. So look for that online. 503-733-2970. Here's Pulp and Common People. Stay there. I know this just sounds retarded, but you know this movie is such a great movie. You just want to pick it up and like and just squeeze it. You just want to pick it up and snuggle it. Oh, fantastic! That is, you know, I don't care. It doesn't matter. You know what? I could get one of my feet swallowed by an angry saber-toothed tiger later on in the day. It doesn't matter. It's a great day because that movie came out this week. The director's cut, double disc edition. Goddamn fantastic is what that is. All right, 503. And here's the thing about that movie is there's so many ways in which it avoids cliche at almost every turn. There is almost no scene in that thing. Right now, name for me a perfect movie. Go. A movie that is perfect without flaws, in which nothing is done incorrectly. In which you can't point to a cheesy line. Because this is sort of an ad hoc topic. Let's do, this is an ad hoc topic right now. Scotty, we're just going to do an ad hoc topic. If people call, they call. If they don't, they don't. We'll move on to other things. I got stuff to do anyway, but we're going to do a little ad hoc roundtable discussion right now. Because there's two things. There's two things we can talk about. You can talk about movies that are perfect, flawless, without errors in any way. And you know the other thing you can talk about, the sort of corollary to that, as the British would say, is this. You can talk about fantastic movies that are ruined by a single terrible moment. You can talk about an awful moment in an otherwise great film. A great film that just has some terrible line, has a terrible piece of dialogue, one joke that's just horrible, or a scene, or whatever. So there's all, I mean, you could do both. The number of absolutely flawless, perfect films is really short. I'm not even sure that I can come up with one.
I can come up with a perfect one, but...
That Thing You Do is close. That Thing You Do is close to being a perfect film.
I think Almost Famous is a really...
Okay, but see, here's the thing about Almost Famous. It's so funny you say that, because that is the example that Joni DeRoshi and I always use for a movie that is 99.9999% flawless, that has one unforgivable moment in it. And do you know the moment I'm referring to?
Not off the top of my head.
There's the terrible moment for me in Almost Famous, which again is in my all-time top five. I mean, it's Almost Famous. The rest of Almost Famous, it's so good that I can forgive this one awful line, and it's not awful because of the content of the line. It's just because it's a cheap laugh that undermines a scene. And don't get me wrong. Almost Famous, and I'm man enough to admit this, I just cried like a girl at that movie. And I'm not alone. I know a lot of guys, a lot of dudes, you know, a lot of guys who saw Almost Famous, which is the best depiction of music fandom I think that's ever been put on film. Ever. Ever. Hands down. It's a movie, Almost Famous, to me, is such an important and wonderful and glorious film that I actually have to make myself not watch it a lot because I want it. I don't want to ruin it. You know what I mean? I don't want to just. It sounds dumb to say I want it to be special, but I mean, I just don't want to. I don't want to burn myself out on it. So I don't let myself watch that, but a couple times a year. But there's that sequence in Almost Famous when they're in the plane and they think they're all going to die, which is based on a true story, by the way. That is based on two stories. It's actually based on Lynyrd Skynyrd. You know, because Lynyrd Skynyrd's plane crashed into a swamp, but they had a couple minutes between. Knowing they were going to crash and equipment crashing. And the survivors of that Lynyrd Skynyrd plane crash have talked to Cameron Crowe about that. And they said, the one guy said, I think it was the keyboard player for Lynyrd Skynyrd, told Cameron Crowe, he's like, we had about 2.5 minutes between knowing we were all going to die and the actual impact of the plane. And he said, in that 2.5 minutes, he said, they totally had this... Like, everybody poured out all of their secrets and things they always wanted to say and things that they wanted to get off their chest before they died, because they all figured they were hosed. So there's that, and then something like that almost happened to The Who as well, and so that's where that comes from. It comes from the real life. Imagine how freaky that would be. 2.5 minutes on a plane knowing you're all about to snuff it. But there's that sequence in Almost Famous where the plane is in turbulence, they're over Tupelo, they think they're going to die, and they start confessing things. The guy's like, hey, I slept with your wife, and the other guy says, I accidentally hit a man with my car years ago, and I ran off, I don't know if he's alive or dead, and the other guy says, well, you know, I've been stealing from the band, I'm sorry, and they're confessing all of these secrets, and then there's this, I mean, it is funny, but it's just so bad for the scene. They're confessing all of these things, and then what's his name, Silent Ed or whatever it is, the drummer, he just goes, F it! I'm gay! And then immediately, the skies turn blue, the thunder vanishes, and the plane is fine, and they're all perfect. And they all turn and look at the guy.
You don't know everything Cameron Crowe does. He probably put that in there for a reason, and maybe one of the scenarios of the people he talked to did confess that they were gay. Because it doesn't seem like something, because he doesn't do like cheap laughs like that. I bet that
that's not true.
I bet that's a knock at somebody. I bet somebody talked to him about to be gay, and he just didn't want to call him out.
I'm just saying, every time I've seen him in the theater, look, everybody laughs at the line. It's a funny moment. And it's obviously made to be a funny moment because the guy says it, and then immediately the plane is fine, and he looks around and he does that like darting of the eyes, like, oh, what have I just done? Everybody laughs. It's a really funny moment. But to me, it sort of like undercuts like the really dramatic seriousness or whatever. It is a minor complaint. I'm just saying, but Joni and I have always used that as a benchmark when writing scripts, is to avoid Like, occasionally we would come up with a joke, like in Bigger Than Jesus or something, and we would look at each other and we go, no, 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 that's an F it on gay moment. Let's get rid of that. Like, that is our go-to, example of a great movie that has, like, a kind of a bad moment in it. And sometimes it's like Glengarry Glen Ross is a fantastic film. It really is. It is my favorite film of all time. And it's wonderful. It's got all of these fantastic moments. And then there's the one scene where Al Pacino comes to talk on a cell phone and it's like the size of a brick. And it's just because that movie seems so timeless. It's not set in any one particular time period until he pulls out that cell phone and it's like he's talking into a gigantic shoe. It's just huge. So, yeah, it's hard to do. All right, well, let's see. We'll just take a couple of quick calls, and this is just an ad hoc, high-concept topic, to see if there are flawless films. We're looking for films that are completely and totally flawless, because I look at That Thing You Do, I can't see a single flaw in that movie. There's no line that rings cheesy. There's nothing that seems
really.
Phony. There's no what. There's no what. That movie is.
I can't pinpoint. I'm gonna have to rewatch it again because I seem to recollect some cheese ball moments where I'm just kind of like, it's a little hard to swallow.
The only thing about that thing you do, which sort of, it's not a flaw, but the only thing about that thing you do, which I don't kind of sticks in my craw a little bit, is I don't know. They just they do have that. And I know it's the '60s, but they do have that stereotypical thing of like. Like a bunch of not rich but sort of quasi famous white people, and there's just and it's like the what's his name, Lamar, the guy who runs the hotel, and it's sort of like being waited on by the black guy, and he's just and it's written in that way that like that it's written in that way that a lot of movies of the '60s and '50s were written, and like he gets out of bed and like he can't wait to help white people, like that's his whole thing. My name is Lamar, and I cannot wait to help white people with their every need, and it's a little off-putting, because I think it takes place in, what, 63? 64? It's something
Know better than
it's me. Like in the early 60s, and so it's like Lamar, it's this whole thing is like, I know the Civil Rights Act has not yet been passed, and I'm a second-class citizen, but I live to help Liv Tyler get her hair done. And it's a little, it feels a little weird. But other than that, I mean, I'm saying that movie is, it's a gem. It's a perfectly cut diamond of a film, is what it is. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hello?
Hi, how can I help you, sir?
Yeah, the flawlessness of the film, That Thing You Do, aside, I was wondering if you'd give me somewhat of a bullet list of how the song That Thing You Do is one of the greatest pop songs of the last 15 years.
I was just talking to Sarah about this during the break. That is, hands down, That Thing You Do, the song, is one of the greatest pop songs of the last, you know, when it came out in 96, so the last, decade plus 15 years. It's so good. It was written by a guy named Adam Schlesinger, who is half of the songwriting duo in Fountains of Wayne, the guys who did Stacey's Mom and Mexican Wine.
Yeah.
It is so great, and it's great on two levels. A, it sounds like a period piece. If you didn't know better, and I said, look, this song came out from during the Beatles' heyday. This was a mid-60s pop hit. You would totally believe it. But at the same time, it doesn't sound dated as such. In other words, you listen to it now, and it doesn't sound sort of corny and cheesy the way a lot of those 60s songs sometimes do. Like, if you listen to, the best example is How Do You Do That Thing You Do to Me by Jerry and the Pacemakers. You listen to that song, and it's so corny, and it just makes your skin crawl. It's just so dopey and badly written. The beat is so bad, the Beatles actually refused to record it, which is why Jerry and the Pacemakers did. You listen to That Thing You Do, and if it was updated and given sort of thick, crunchy guitars and like a lot of vocals, that would work now as like a Bowling for Soup song. It would totally work as a contemporary pop song. It's like 3 minutes and 2 seconds long. It's got the middle eight. It's got a solo. It's got harmonies behind it. It's catchy. You remember it the first time you heard it. I mean, it's perfect. If that song, That Thing You Do, that is one of those songs that just torments me because I'm sort of a bad songwriter on, you know, when I'm not doing the radio thing, I write and record bad songs that, you know, I'm bad at. But they're all attempts at that. Every song I write is an attempt to sound like That Thing You Do. And everything I do is like a third rate That Thing You Do. It's if I could write one song like that, I would die a happy man.
Well, you know, and I watched it, and I think the song itself, I guess, is good. It's just after a while, it started sounding like a Mentos commercial to me.
But
I don't know.
I think that's the whole point of the song, though. At the risk of overanalyzing the movie, the whole point of That Thing You Do, both the movie and the song, because you'll note that they play it, like, I think, six times. They play it in Jimmy's Garage. They play it at the talent show. They play it at what is that? What's the pizza place? Villa Biachos or whatever the pizza place is. They play it there. They play it on stage at the fair. They play it on the television show. And so you kind of, by the end of the movie, you sort of feel like you're getting burned out on it, which is sort of supposed to be a microcosm of the band itself being trapped as a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, because by the end, I just want to pop Mentos and give everybody a high five, you know?
It's true. Like, it is relentlessly cheery, sir. All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, there you go. Fantastic. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello and howdy.
Hey, this is Brad.
Hey, what's up?
In listening to this, I was thinking about how different songs are this day and age. You know, I kind of like it back to the Beatles when their big anthem was I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Totally.
Which you compare that to, like, the Akon song, you know, the I Want to Love You or whatever, which is kind of the edited down version.
Totally. So, it's, and it, you know, and there's none of, there wasn't a whole lot of, there wasn't a whole lot of me so hornies being written at that point in time. You're right. No,
that's
absolutely.
But I wanted to weigh in on the perfect movie for me.
Yes.
I could never change anything else. Was The Usual Suspects.
The Usual Suspects, the only possible thing I can point about that is, again, it's the Glengarry Glen Ross thing of when Agent, what's his name, not Dave Coulion, but the other guy, is in the hospital questioning the guy who's singed up. A, and I hate to point this out because you'll notice it too, A, again, he's got a cell phone that's the size of a garbage can, and B, the Turkish guy who walked out of the boat after being, you know, his entire body covered in third-degree burns and yet still has eyebrows. There you go. So you'll notice that. Other than that, though, yes, a flawless film.
All right, see
ya. Excellent, thank you. Yeah, still has eyebrows. Because what do you say? I got a guy down here trying to walk out of the hospital on a fried drumstick. Still has eyebrows. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello, it's Diana.
Hey, what's up, sister?
Oh, American Beauty. American Beauty is perfect. It's flawless. I love the pacing. I love the symbolism.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's fine. I won't disagree. We'll make this an open forum. I'll tell you this. Here's what I'll say about American Beauty. It's a perfectly done film. In other words, the writing, the directing, the acting are all really flawless.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a movie that I care for. Personally, I don't care for that film. I have many thoughts on that, which I will not bother everybody with. I will say that in execution, though, it's a pretty perfectly done film. The other thing about American Beauty is the score, which is by a guy named Thomas Spalding, I think his name is. He's the guy that did the score for American Beauty. If you can ever get that on CD, it's really, really, really wonderful. The score for that movie is great.
Well, maybe it's just a case of I'm an old woman, and, you know, it makes me think about different things, you know?
I will say, here's my only problem with American Beauty. My only problem with American Beauty is that... never mind. You know what? I'm not gonna be a negative Nelly about it. I'm just gonna move on.
Thank you.
There you go. I'm not gonna carp about American Beauty. I will say that Kevin Spacey is great in that, and it's got Thora Birch looking hot. Hot. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Two perfect movies. Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Okay.
Easy Rider. And I'm hanging.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks so much. Easy Rider, I can't even comment on. Easy Rider, Tim just stuck his tongue out in a disgusted fashion. I don't know, Tim, maybe you have different thoughts. Maybe your thoughts on it are different. My thing about Easy Rider is, I think I am of the wrong generation to be able to judge that movie objectively, because when I watch it now, it just looks stupid. It just seems like a parody of itself, you know? And it's a lot of guys smoking bad weed around a fireplace going, man, it's the system, you know? And it's just... Mm-hmm. It just seems dumb.
Well, people were told it spoke for a generation, and people were supposed to believe that. Not everybody was a protesting hippie back then.
Well, that's exactly the thing.
If you were a year or two ahead of that, then you weren't part of that.
That's like
a year or two behind.
That's like when I'm constantly told that Kurt Cobain is the voice of my generation, which, you know, maybe is true for some folks. But, you know, for me and a lot of the people like me, Kurt Cobain is no more of a spokesperson for me than than Mrs. Olsen was. So, I mean, Schneider from One Day at a Time is not a spokesperson for me, nor is Kurt Cobain. Just because he happened to be around when I was 17 and 18 years old, doesn't mean he's my spokesperson. So it is with Easy Rider. There's just nothing I can, you know, it doesn't affect me at all. And that's not just because it's old. There's a lot of movies from that era that totally speak to me. That's just not one of them. We're talking about, how do we get off into, because the greatest movie in the history of all of the world, which is That Thing You Do, comes out in a double disc set this week.
That's still going on?
Oh.
I left for a while, then I came back.
Oh,
I,
no, you missed.
I didn't
played...
know this is being festered in this room.
No, we put festered is we put fester. We played the whole song. We're talking about perfect movies.
Oh, that does sound
that's
like
all fun. We're doing here. Hi, Russ. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Yeah, my all-time perfect movie would probably be The Big Chill.
I like The Big Chill, and I know it's fashionable for people in my generation to make fun of that film because it's baby boomers, but I like that movie quite a lot.
Great movie soundtrack, great acting, and what more could you want?
And the only problem with The Big Chill, and it's not the movie's fault, is that that gave us, The Big Chill did beget a whole generation of films that had white women in kitchens singing Motown songs into hairbrushes. but they were the first to do it, so they can kind of get a pass. It does have Kevin Kline in a really, really great role, and it's got, what's his name, playing Tom Berenger, playing J.T. Lancer.
And so, William Hurt.
And it's got, okay, here's a little pop culture quiz. Who played the corpse?
Kevin Costner.
Well done, sir. You can be a talk show host someday. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
All right. And it's got, what's his name, playing a radio talk show host? William Hurt? Who's the guy? Is it William Hurt?
In The Big movie? Chill?
In The Big Chill.
I don't remember.
He's the drug addict that ends up banging the Tilly girl. Sorry. Maybe that's not a... Your greatest success came as a radio talk show host on KSFO. Just talking to myself.
Hi.
How you doing?
You're
is this,
today.
Is this one of those shows where I've sort of left everybody else behind? I'm sort of off in my own orbit. The people are with me on this.
This reminds me, I'm kind of having weird flashbacks. This reminds me of a show that you would have done like 4 years ago.
A sort of a listy sort of
yeah.
show?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't do that as much now, but you know what? I'm not above just sitting and listing off a bunch of crap every now and again. I just don't. I'm just at the point where I don't want to make a whole career out of that, which is, some people are fine with that. You know, there's shows that do that, and I'm not going to knock them. Everybody got to make a living. People got to eat. But there's shows that, like, that's their whole deal is, this hour I'm going to make a list of things. Like, go. And I'm certainly, as you can tell, I'm not above doing that now and again. It is one of the arrows in my quiver, one might say. But I'm past the point where I want to do 4 hours of that every day, which is what they had me doing when I was doing the syndicated show.
I remember being in the hallway of the previous radio station, and I won't say which one. But the host was screaming at his producer, no more lists.
Really?
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right, let's do one more here, and then we got a break. We just, because of that thing you do, we just were talking about Tim Riley, a perfect film. Can you list a perfect film? It's not that thing you do. A film that in which you
in
see...
what genre?
It doesn't matter.
Film noir or comedy?
It doesn't matter. It can be a film, just a film in which you see no flaws. A film that you would show as an example of perfect filmmaking.
Are you there?
Yeah, hold on just 1 second, sir.
Okay.
I'll take one, for example. A comedy. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
That is, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is pretty damn perfect. I can't think of a single bad scene, there's not a dull moment. It's funny all the way through. It's touching without being cloying at the end. It's got the great John Candy, some of the best physical comedy ever. It's hilariously profane in one section, but it doesn't rely on the comedy, on the profanity as a crutch. Yeah.
Here's another one that nobody remembers. My Favorite Year with Peter O'Toole.
That's a great movie. My Favorite Year. How much tool? No, that doesn't really work. That's a great movie.
I thought I was the only one who remembered that.
No. I mean, I
have it at home on the original tape, and I can't play it anymore because it's been stretched.
Is it out on DVD?
It must be.
I haven't seen that movie for a long time. That's where he tries to... He's the alcoholic, right?
What reminded me of it the other day was... When I saw the Spider-Man movie and they were on that bridge, that is the same bridge that they used in the scene on horseback in My Favorite Year.
Oh, see, now I have to go see it again. I haven't seen that movie.
That bridge in Central Park is used in so many movies.
15, 20 years, maybe.
Yes, that old.
All right.
It's that guy from Perfect Strangers. I can't remember his name.
All right, we got to do one more here and then we'll break. Phil, hi.
How's it going?
What's
I
got to
say Stand By Me.
Stand By Me. That might be flawless.
That's what Lisa was writing over and over again to me as well.
I can't think of a single bad moment. Here's the only, and it's not even a flaw, here's the one thing that bugs me about Stand By Me. And I don't remember if it's the same in the story, the novella, The Body, which is what that is a Stephen King novel, short novel that's based on. The thing that bugs me about Stand By Me, though, at the end, is that they never, because the whole thing is told as a flashback from Gordy as an adult, right? Where he's sitting there in the field looking sad. He never describes how it is that they managed to live the rest of their life in that town and not have Ace and Eyeball just come beat them into powder at some point. Because it ends with him like, you cheap dime store hood, and he's pointing the gun, and then Kiefer Sutherland's all pissed, and he says, We are going to get you, and then what's-his-name says, maybe you will and maybe you won't. They never describe exactly how it is that they managed to survive the rest of their adolescence without being killed by Kiefer Sutherland. Other than that, great movie, though. Great movie. Thank you, sir.
All right.
All right. Somewhere, have I already done my Stand By Me thing? Did I do that last week, or I think I might have been having dinner with Joni when I did that, right in my hole. Somewhere underneath those bushes was the rest of Ray Brower. Did I do that on the air? So I'm officially recycling myself now. Fantastic. Okay, here you go. Listen today. It's Rick Emerson. Recycle some crap you did last week. All right. All right, we get to take a break. 503-733-2970. More of Tim Riley ahead. More of my wacky musings about various issues of the day ahead and other things. That pretty much leaves it open for whatever. Back after this, don't go anywhere. It's a Rick Emerson show. It's the Rick Emerson Show, 503-733-2970. Today we're going to be listing prime numbers. Call with your favorite prime number. All right, 503-733-2970. Number?
I barely knew her.
503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. We are mere minutes away from Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. And later on we got the... I honestly don't know what the hell we've got later on. Well, we'll be making it up together, friends. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from MrSkin.com, the online celebrity nudity database, our good friend Mr. Skin. What is up, brother man?
Hey, Rick, how you doing, man?
How are things in Skintopia or whatever it is that you work?
There's no off days in nudity, so we're busy as usual.
Thank you. What should people... Well, first of all, there's a couple things. At the multiplex, what should folks be keeping an eye out for nudity-wise?
Well, there's a couple of things coming out this week that... guys should be aware of. There's a zombie flick that's going to be in theaters opening this Friday called 28 Weeks Later.
Right, the 28 Days Later sequel.
You got it. And the main babe in this, or one of the main babes, is Catherine McCormick, who a lot of guys might not know the name, but they'd remember as the super hot chick in Braveheart who shows her breasts with Mel Gibson.
Right. Yeah.
Gorgeous. And the good news is 37 minutes in, there's a return skin engagement where she shows a left breast. It's not both, but I'll take one from her. And she's very hot, and she's naked. And 28 weeks later, it happens at the 37-minute mark.
All right. Excellent.
Now, as far as DVDs, there's a few things at the new release section of your favorite video store. A movie called Fur, an imaginary portrait of Deanne Arbus starring Nicole Kidman, hit stores this week. And it's interesting. Nicole Kidman's an A-list Hollywood actress. No one would deny that. And this is her 13th movie she's been naked in. I got to give her a lot of credit.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I don't remember her being naked in anything.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you remember Eyes Wide Shut. Guys,
oh, that's true.
That.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Billy Bathgate. Lots of movies. And don't forget, she did a lot in her native Australia before, you know, she hit it big here in the U.S. But I can say she shows her Australian outback and her boomerangs in this movie. So good nudity from Nicole Kidman. But okay, what's cool is it's her 13th movie, and you got to give her credit for 13 movies of nudity.
Fantastic.
So.
And is there anything special happening at the MrSkin.com? I don't think anything can top boomerangs.
Yeah, sorry. Well, there's one other movie I wanted to mention. As far as DVDs go, there's a movie called Breaking and Entering, which is new on DVD this week. And Juliette Binoche has great full frontal nudity in all three Bs in this movie. But a girl who I think I wanted to focus on here is named Vera Farmiga. She was the girl in the movie The Departed with Jack Nicholson and Leo DiCaprio and Matt Damon and all the guys. She was the hot babe counselor.
Oh, the psychiatrist.
You got psychiatrist.
Yeah.
The movie won Best Picture, and a lot of guys were a little bummed that she got to her underwear, didn't get completely nude in that, but the good news is 29 minutes in, to breaking and entering. There is a breast shot in there. She also did a movie called Down to the Bone before she did The Departed, where she had great nudity. But this is very good. It's called Breaking and Entering. Lots of nudity, including nudity from Vera Farmiga, the hot babe from The Departed.
Excellent. Fantastic. All right, my friend, MrSkin.com is the online celebrity nudity database. Always a pleasure. We will talk to you soon, sir.
All right, Rick. Take care, man.
Thank you. Mr. Skin, there you go. Boomerangs. That's fantastic.
That's hilarious.
Really. You know, the great thing about that guy is that he, that guy really has just, he is an American success story. Just made an entire, he has leveraged an entire career out of watching for bosoms on screen than telling other horny guys where they can go to see it. Really, you have to, you really do have to salute that. Ladies and gentlemen, he is your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator. Will you please put your working class hands together for...
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
A fake psyche takes advantage of a disabled woman. A California woman took advantage of a mentally disabled woman and convinced her to travel to Oregon and make extravagant purchases. King Ping met Janet Adams at a mall in Southern California about 6 months ago. The woman formed a friendship with Adams, convincing Ping that she was psychic and she needed to travel to Oregon to buy a Buddhist temple together. While in Oregon, and why wouldn't you?
So they're both from California.
Yes.
But they traveled here.
Yes.
To buy a Buddhist temple together.
That's correct.
Well, she's a mentally disabled woman?
Yes.
Why? So how is it that she had enough money? How does it she manage her money properly enough to have money to have the sufficient funds to buy a temple?
Well, perhaps she was living on a trust fund.
That is entirely possible, I suppose. I was going to say, I'm not retarded, and I can't manage my money. So, Right. Okay, well, fair enough.
So while in Oregon, Adams made Peng apply for numerous credit cards. They used the credit to purchase expensive items, many of which Adams would secretly return for cash without telling a soul. Adams then took the victim to a Cadillac dealership where they bought a brand new sport utility vehicle for $66,000 by writing bad checks. Then Peng called police from a hotel in Hillsboro asking for help. Police responded and Peng is now under the care of a mental health provider. Adams under arrest for criminal mistreatment and identity theft.
Fantastic. Let's hope she's beaten senseless in lockup.
Meanwhile, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue were called to Southwest 85th Avenue when crews arrived. They found a man lying in a large four-sided concrete pit. The subcontractor had fallen more than 20 feet from a large crane. This is the second crane fall we've had. This is a different one. The rescue team then used one of the cranes to pull the man out of the pit and lower him to safety. His condition is not known at this time. A Washington homeowner living in wildlife territory had a close encounter with a cougar. A cougar looked down on him from a porch in a tree. Jason Vineyard was working in his yard Monday night when he heard a non-human scream.
Non-union. I'm not answering that.
I'm the IBW. A non-human scream, looked up and saw a cougar on a tree branch right above his head. Well, Vineyard ran to his garage to get his trusty shooting iron. Well, the cougar followed close behind. Once he had the gun, Vineyard apparently looked larger and menacing. The cougar stopped in his tracks. It wasn't his goal to kill the cat, of course, just scare it off. So he fired four shots, and the cat took off. Cougar experts recommend anyone near one try to make themselves appear large and confrontational.
That shouldn't be a problem for most people in Oregon. I'm sorry. I mean, it was right there. What was I going to do? Not say it?
That's correct.
Try to puff yourself up and look like a fat ass. Try to look like a bloated, pasty person. Mm-hmm. Do your best.
Meanwhile, the massive Griffith Park fire has caused the evacuation of some animals from the L.A. Zoo. The L.A. City Animal Services Department is telling residents in the area they might likely see some of these animals roaming around neighborhoods, but don't be frightened or try to be confrontational. They just might be in your garden looking for something to eat. Happy birthday to one of our favorite people. He's 81.
Wait.
Very 81. Famous.
81. Bob Barker. No. Wait, hold on. Male?
Yes.
Yes. Alive. Male. A broadcaster?
No. Somebody we've seen before in the past.
Don Rickles.
Yes. He's 81 today.
Really? I thought he was so much older than
that. And he's still touring.
Good for him. God bless him.
So that's that. He's been married to the same woman 41 years.
Really?
Yeah.
The people come in, and that's one of the first things I point out when they come in. There's the picture of me and Clyde with Don Rickles right there next to my Cormen and Conway.
It could have been me if I got there earlier.
But I
listened to all the naysayers saying there wouldn't be a line. And every time we have a party, there always is a line.
They always say, not going to be sold out. It'll be empty. Man, that guy sold out two nights.
I think I'll arrive 2 minutes before showtime.
And I'm sure I'll get a front row seat.
And a drink. I'm sure there'll be lots of bar staff. It's a Rick Emerson listener party. Why would there not be bar staff aplenty? All right.
Yes, live and learn, I suppose.
Yes.
From Tallahassee, Florida, comes the word.
From where?
Tallahassee.
Where?
Tallahassee.
I was waiting for you to... Where's Tallahassee?
Florida.
All right.
Eight former prison employers are accused of abusing inmates, including forcing them to clean toilets with their tongues. These former employees were involved in a series of dehumanizing and degrading behavior. Noting some of the inmates were given choices of eating their food off the floor or providing sexual favors to the guards. So most chose to flick the toilet. Giving what some of these guards looked like.
Jesus God! He humiliated me, Mr. Wilde. He took away my human dignity, Mr. Wilde. He treated me like a dog. Okay. Let's take this story again. So they were given a choice. This is like some sort of deal or no deal in hell or at Guantanamo.
Yes.
This is Howie Mandel with horns. Would you rather? Clyde and I used to play this game all the time, which is the whole either or. It was like you either have to have sex with B. Arthur. Or like you have to like cut off the tip of one of your fingers or something. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So, what was the choice?
Now let's see here. They were given choice of eating their food off the floor, or providing sexual favors to the guards.
Okay, but where did the cleaning the toilet?
We have cases where inmates were compelled under threat of force to clean the commode with their tongues. These are improper, illegal, heinous, and despicable acts.
Really. I like the idea that you might... I'm sure there'll be a sensitivity training course sometime in the future.
Hmm.
Oh, all right. That's about the worst thing. I think that is so much worse than most of the stories I've got set aside later on for the people to be glad you're not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of them can hold a candle to cleaning a toilet with your tongue.
Most
I wonder,
Florida.
Were these...
it's a step above Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah, I suppose.
If you're good, you get to go to Florida.
Florida's sort of the minimum security. That's the white-collar version of Guantanamo.
Yes.
I wonder if it was a sit-down toilet or like a wall urinal.
It doesn't specify.
Okay.
Do we want to know?
No. No, we don't. Just fill in the details in our head.
Well, this is the Hendry Correctional Institution in the Everglades.
Hendry Correctional Institution. I want to... Margaret Brain comes through and beats you with a stick.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There's some other joke to be made there about Hendry, but...
Well, the John and Jeff...
That's why
I should have waited. I'm sure I would have heard it.
No, that's why you're beloved and I'm merely tolerated, because I didn't think about that. The IMIS Correctional Institute, now closed. This is Anaya and Gia, or Gaya? Hi, what's your name?
Anjaya,
that's a nice name. What kind of name is that?
You'd be loved. It's Latin, but...
Whatever. That's Latin as in south of the border, or
no,
Latin as in, like, Rome?
Latino, like Latin as in...
She says it with
the foremost language. Anyhow.
Okay, what's Anjaya? That's a great name. Okay, what's up?
Well, what I wanted to tell you about Stand By Me
is,
if you remember, you were saying, like, I wonder why they didn't come back and kick his, you know what?
Well, I guess, Mike, because at the end of Stand By Me, we were talking about perfect movies, and by the way... We are taking this call, and I think probably this one other call here, but we are not triggering a whole new spate of perfect movie calls. That segment is over. These two calls are grandfathered in, and we're taking no more calls
on
this.
So, one grandmother then. Okay.
So let me just... So the end of Stand By Me, so there's Gordy LeChance. I'm acclimated to say LeChance, because we used to work with a guy named LeChance, and he insisted that it was pronounced LeChance. But at the end... Ace and Eyeball are driven off because Gordy's got the gun and whatever. And Kiefer Sutherland says, you know, we're going to get you.
Right.
It never happened. And so I want to know, like, how is it that they avoided this guy who was, like, bent on killing them for the next 20 years?
Okay, the only reason I listen to your show every day is because I have ADD and you, like, make me aware of everything so I can still keep track. The reason why that didn't happen is because... he was, like, punked by a little kid with a gun in his face. That's why he didn't, like, retaliate, because he didn't want people to know that he was retaliating. He didn't want the whole story out.
Now, is this...
The story was...
I think.
Is this your, this is, so this is your speculation.
My interpretation of the story.
Your read on the story is that Kiefer Sutherland didn't retaliate because then people would know that he had been bested, in other words, by, by a 12-year-old with a gun.
Right, who was narrating a story about him in the first place.
Fair enough.
Anyway.
Fair enough.
Best movie of all time, Goodfellas. I'm sorry, but Goodfellas.
Goodfellas is flawless. You're right, there's not a single flaw.
So.
Not a single
there's
flaw
in
there.
There's not enough food, there's not enough sex, there's not enough blonde girls in it, but it's still a great movie that is still flawless.
You're a little wacky, aren't you? You're a little strict. You on it now? When you say you have ADD, is that like a home diagnosis or are you clinically diagnosed as ADD?
Well, that's what the clinic told me that I have, and I went with the itch. No, I'm just kidding. I just have attention deficit disorder.
No, I'm willing to swallow that. What celebrity would you say you most resemble?
Janet Jackson, of course.
Really?
Really?
Wait, now are we
that's
talking?
What everybody tells me.
Are we talking Rhythm Nation Janet Jackson? Or are we talking Velvet Rope Janet Jackson?
We're talking Rhythm Nation because I can't lose this ass to save my life.
That is fantastic. This is the best call we've ever had. Excellent. Yeah. God bless you. And it's Andrea?
Andrea.
All right. You call us anytime, sister.
No problem.
All right. Fantastic. Thanks. There you go. How Rhythm Nation, Janet Jackson. That's the right answer. Because I can't lose this ass to save my life. That's so great.
You're so creepy. I hate it when we have a cool chick call, and then all of a sudden at the end you're like, so what do you look like?
I didn't say what do you look like. I said, what celebrity do you most resemble?
That's what do you look like. You know it.
I know it is, but it's better than, what are you wearing? You know, I don't want to be that guy. How great, you know, by the way, we are creating a state, what they call a station composite, which is like a 3-minute overview of the entire station that's going to be played at this CBS thing tomorrow that we're not going to be attending. And it's a 3-minute overview of the entire station that they're going to play for like every single person to CBS Radio Portland.
Oh my God, really?
We should totally put that on there, Scotty D. I have ADD, and so I listen to your program because it's the only thing that makes the demons in my head stop shouting.
A lot of the people who start drinking at
like 9 a.m. Yeah, they're like, I'm quitting my job, and my deaf girl and I are going across country with a bowling bag full of cash. Just put all of those. Call us one long streak. How about this one? Here's another call that we can put on the composite. Hi, sir.
That's Marty.
Hey, what's up with your day?
Well, I missed a segment. I was drinking beer.
And doing what?
And mowing my lawn.
Yeah.
With riding lawnmowers. Yeah. The only way I can drink and drive.
Yeah.
Without going on a public roadway.
All right.
Anyway.
Yes.
Anyway, so I missed the segment on the best movie, and I just came in at the tail end, and I wanted to...
No. Scotty?
Oh, please.
Hold on a second. Scott. No, let's...
Scotty J. This is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say, except...
You're not going to amount to jack squat!
Marty, you still there?
Scotty.
Yeah, I'm still here. You
right,
brought Scotty in.
Yeah, hold on a second. All right, yes, I know. Thank you. Hold on a second, sir. Our intrepid PA, Scotty J. Scotty?
Hello?
I give you props for putting through a guy who's drinking beer and riding his lawnmower.
Right, and but, I know the other two were grandfathered in, and yes. The guy drinking beer and riding his lawnmower just tugged at my heart, and so... He was out there. He's out there busy on a sunny day, mowing his lawn, drinking beer, and you know he had to get into a landline to call the show so he could do the movie thing because he thought it was going to be an all day thing that he could just drink beer until close to 3 o'clock and get his call.
I'm not stopping him.
He had no idea that call would be cut off. So
well, so in your
I
opinion,
let him through.
So in your you made a judgment call. That even though we have ended the perfect movie topic, the fact that he was drinking beer and riding a lawnmower, that was enough to sort of make it okay.
And that's all he had to say to me.
Yeah, well done. No, you chose correctly. That really was a correct assessment. All right, sir. So, Marty, perfect movie. Go.
Yes, sir. It's a mad, 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 mad world.
Boy.
It's got to be the best.
Jack Lemmon. Is that Jack Lemmon?
No, it's well, it's a whole bunch.
It's
of
like
people.
A cast of about 700 people, right? Like
the
I
best,
think like Milton Berle is in that, and yeah, I've never seen it. I just know that it was like a cast of thousands.
It was, and it even has Jimmy Durante.
Really?
I mean, my God,
with him and his nose.
Yeah.
Milton Berle is the only guy I know who's in it. That's one of the first. It's a mad, 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 mad world. Was one of the cast films, right? Where it was like the whole shtick was that there was like 80 celebrities in it.
Oh, and they were all comedians and they were the best of their times. I mean, we're talking the best. Jerry Lewis, Spencer Tracy. You have to rent it and watch it. It's outstanding.
Excellent.
It's kind of long, but it's the best.
All right.
I mean, it'll just have you rolling in the aisle.
Okay. No. How much of your lawn is done, sir?
Well, Well, I'm finished.
You're finished. So now you're no longer riding the lawnmower. You're just drinking in a stationary position.
No, I put it away. I'm gonna drink some more beer.
All right. Are you gonna switch alcohols at some point?
Nah. Stick with the beer.
Stick with beer. That's probably find a niche and exploit it. That's what I would find, something you're good at. In this case, it is the drinking beer, and just pursue it relentlessly.
But it's premium beer. It's high octane.
What is that? What kind of beer is it, sir?
Natural Ice.
Okay.
It's 5.9% instead of that stupid 3.2 stuff.
Yeah. You don't want to be drinking any of that low octane beer. You don't want to drink
save money.
Don't drink any of that Utah beer. All right.
Save money that way.
Yes. All right, Marty, enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you for calling us, sir.
I will. My lawn looks good. And say hi to Sarah and Tim.
All right, hold on. Hi, Sarah and Tim.
Hello.
Hi, Marty.
All right, thanks.
All right. Thanks, man.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, okay.
I have a bit of breaking news here.
Let me get the, hold on with the breaking news. And the. Okay.
Paris Hilton has just issued the following statement through her attorney, Richard Hutton. Quote, after reading the media's coverage of my court hearing, I feel the need to correct what I believe are misconceptions about me.
I am a stupid, spoiled whore.
I absolutely realize how serious driving under the influence is. I could not live with myself if anyone was injured or killed while I was driving while impaired. Clearly, no one should, no matter how slightly. I am ready to face the consequences for violating probation. No one is above the law. I surely am not. I do not expect to be treated better than anyone else who violated probation. However, my hope is that I will not be treated any worse.
That is so lame.
That's the, I sense the ghostly hands of Elliot Mintz there. That's why you hire that guy. Because she knows that she was just looking like a big C over the last day or two.
Looking like mincemeat.
Yeah, exactly. Mincemeat. All right. Well done. That's Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen, right there. Bush really doesn't. Bush and the Queen really don't have wit. When they say that about Bush and the Queen, it's a lie. Tim has all the wit. He's going to the market on wit. All right. It's 503-733-2970. This email just says B. Arthur is hot as balls. All right. Thank you. Let's take a break. We'll come back. 2 o'clock hour. You know, I don't know what we're going to do in the 2 o'clock hour. I really don't know.
No movie talk?
Well, here's the thing about that, Sarah, is we did this whole inadvertent ad hoc listing of stuff, and you know what I had planned for the 2 o'clock hour? A whole listing of stuff. But it was going to be TV shows. Well, I don't have time to talk about it now. All right, we'll come back. 503-733-2970. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show. We're back after this. I'm obsessed with figuring out which bed it is that you like a lot. The music bed. Music bed.
Oh, yeah.
Hello.
Creepy. I'm just totally distracted about my cell phone woes. That sucks.
Now, you dropped it in what? Beer?
I dropped it in beer. And it wasn't working, and then it started working, and now it's not working.
But now just the speakerphone works.
Now just the speakerphone works. I'm almost like a douchebag every time I want to talk.
Only if you plug it into a wall.
Which means I have to go get a new battery today. Which means inevitably I'm going to have to get a new cell phone because I'm not going to spend my entire life speaking on speakerphone.
Like Scotty J.
Scotty J loves speaking on
Scotty who does
phone.
Everything on speakerphone. Everything. It's, you know, you walk by and it's a whole lot of like, hello, this is Scotty J. Hi, Scotty J. And it's like the entire world has to be in on his conversation. I guess I should take these calls. This call. These call. I should take these call.
He's not good.
Let's see. All right, I'm going to take this final call, and this is grandfathered in from like 40 minutes ago, so this guy's been holding. MJ, hi.
Hi.
Hey, you are the final call ever on Flawless Movies. Go.
Great, and I want to apologize to lying to Scotty, because I told him I couldn't hold, and obviously I lied.
Yeah, seriously, you've been on hold for like an hour, so go ahead.
Hey, I just want to had a question, and it was, is it strange that I have to watch School of Rock like every 6 months because my wife just thinks I'm bizarre?
No. And in fact, I will say, now I got to stop. I got to be very careful how I phrase this because I don't want this to turn into another stupid list because we'll do that Friday. But we had this story yesterday about most frequently viewed films. It was a story. Do not call about this now. Don't call about this now. But we had this story about movies that are most likely to be viewed again and again and again and again. The fact that even such a study exists proves that you are not weird. I will say this. I was talking to my friend Joni about this the other day. We were talking about the films that shaped us growing up that we watched more. For instance, I swear to God, no one call about this. Sarah, growing up, what was the movie, like when you were like, let's say 12, 13, 14, what was the one movie that you think you watched over and over more than any other?
Probably Labyrinth.
Yeah, see, so there you go. With me, it was probably either...
That's a flawless movie, come on now.
I haven't seen Labyrinth in like 20 years, so I don't even know. There's probably a special edition of that out now. It's like a director's cut or some crap.
No, I'm sure.
Growing up, for me, it was either The Blues Brothers or Jaws. One of those two. I've seen Jaws, hundreds of times, probably. And so it's School of Rock that you watch over and over again?
It is.
School of Rock is a pretty flawless movie. It's especially good when you consider the fact that it's filled with cute little kids, which is normally the death knell for a movie. Normally that's the sign of a movie that I'll never, ever like. But School of Rock is really well done. And that's about two things. That's about Jack Black, and that's about the fact that it was written by Mike White, who knows how to steer away from cloying sentiment. So School of Rock, have you noticed on the show, sir, we use a School of Rock bumper, a piece of bumper music.
Right on.
We use that whole, and if you want to be the teacher's pet, baby, you just better forget it. That song they sing at the end, we use that here on the show.
And anytime kids say, kiss my ass, you know, that's...
Or the best line is when they're talking to Joan Cusack and they go, whatever her name is, and they say, Principal so-and-so, you're the man. Which is, well, thank you, kids. So, no, it's not weird at all, sir. Is it your wife that complains about it?
Yes.
Yeah, tell her to get bent.
Will do.
All right, thank you. There you go. All right, fantastic. All right.
It's hot in here.
Okay. It's 503-733-2970. Is that why you're all... I'm not going to say you're blotchy. You're kind of shiny.
I look blotchy?
Not... See, I can make you...
Thank
the best
you.
Thing about it is I can make you insecure with just one word. It's not blotchy so much as it's... it's like... Maybe it's the lights. You do look a little... little peaked, like it's the sun, like it's a,
Oh, well, you want to know why? Because I was out riding my bike all afternoon, Rick Emerson.
You were there with me all afternoon.
No, yesterday I was. Well, and today I did, too.
I was not. You know where I was? I was riding my bike nowhere. I was sitting on the sofa.
Oh, next week, your host, though, I cannot wait to see you here out of breath, because you put it... How long has it been? Like,
I rode my bike this last weekend, once. I rode it on Saturday somewhere. That's it. That's it, though.
I just don't think you remember how hard it is. And plus, you don't ride that far. You ride, like, what, 3 miles?
It's not here? 3 miles. Who said that? See, I saw... Okay, let's talk about someone. And by someone, I mean Seamus. Let's see. I'm going to... And again, we should note, by the way, that this is not a CBS radio promotion. I'm glad that he put this in huge letters. He said, I have no official association with CBS Radio or AM 970. So, all right. And I know I keep lying and say... It's not a lie when I say it. I just forget. I keep saying that I'm going to put this on my webpage. It's emersonchallenge.blogspot.com. Emersonchallenge.blogspot.com. So what happens is this guy, Seamus, who's a big listener of ours, I would say he officially qualifies as a super fan. And I don't mean that's not a... And some radio stations will say that, and they say it in sort of a snippy way. They say it as kind of like a pejorative. And I don't really. To me, that's a... I'm a super fan for some of their stuff. Look at the way I got all cranked up about Alice Cooper, who then broke my heart. We have super fans, and that's a great thing to be. It really is. So, that's a cool... ain't no shame in that, as the man says. But he got tired of hearing me bitch about never bicycling. Which I just, I mean to, and then I just don't.
Here's and then, the it isn't even the bicycling so much as it is all the complaining and crap that comes out of your mouth when you're talking about, oh, I can't stop shoving my face full of Chex Mix.
It's true.
And you don't do anything about it.
I know.
Even
all I do is complain.
Break and just keep shoveling more food in.
And
how much do you weigh?
And how many calories can I possibly burn off by complaining?
We did a weigh off for you last time. What was that?
Well,
in January?
And here's I think so. Well, here, and this is the reason. Okay, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So we'll talk about the weighing here in a moment. And the reason, because I showed you that thing that I got in the mail. Well, we'll talk about my weight here in just a second. So, Seamus got tired of hearing me bitch about how I wasn't bicycling and how I lacked willpower. And Seamus decided to give me what Tony Robbins would call external leverage. And so if you go to Emerson Challenge, that's one word, emersonchallenge.blogspot.com. And again, this is something, an external promotion. This is not something that CBS Radio has done. This is something that the listeners themselves are doing. He has received $4,695.06 in pledges. Now, pledges are not always the actual amount you get. Sometimes there's people who weasel out. But if you assume 70%, that's still like $3,000. That's still like $3,200. So he's got almost $5,000 in pledges. And the deal is, this is what he, and I, again, I have no participation in this except that it's me that they're hanging it on. I didn't create this at all. What they have done is, they have got this money. It's $4,600, almost $4,700. And they will donate that money to the Special Olympics 1 year from this coming Monday. So, in other words, it's May 14th, 2008. But the deal is, they're going to, and it's worked out to $17.92 a day between now and then. They're going to deduct $17.92 for every day that I don't bicycle. So, in other words, ideally, if I were to bicycle to work every day between May 14th of this year and May 14th of next year, if I bicycle to work every single day, they'll donate the full $4,700. But for every day that I don't bicycle, they're going to deduct $17 off of it. And they've got a huge thing set up that they're ready to launch on Monday. It says, Rick has screwed retarded children out of blank dollars. And it's going to ratchet up by 17 bucks every day that I don't bicycle, you sons of bitches.
You're going to be bicycling every day.
Well,
right?
And so here's the thing. So that's why I'm not bicycling today. And I'm not going to bicycle tomorrow or Friday, Saturday or Sunday. Because if I'm going to have to do it Monday, if I'm going to have to start it Monday because of the
but
children.
But it shouldn't even be a having to thing. Like, you're the one who proclaims yourself to be a bike rider. If you like to ride your bike, you like to ride it because you like the experience.
Well, here's the thing. I do like to ride my bike. In my own defense, I rode it this weekend, I rode it last weekend, and I will say this. If I didn't have to be to work, like I used to do an afternoon drive show, an afternoon drive, in my case, it was 4 to 7, because that's my natural body clock, is I get my natural body clock, in other words, if I didn't have to be to work, I would get up around 11 o'clock or noon, go to work at around 3 or 4, work till around midnight, stay up till around 4 in the morning, and then sleep from like 4 to noon. That's my natural body clock.
So you have like a bartender schedule.
I do, and just naturally, internally, that's my body clock. If I didn't have to be to work till 4, and I'm not complaining, I'm just saying, as a matter of statement, as a fact, if I didn't have to be to work till like 4 in the afternoon, this would be no problem. I'd get up, I wouldn't be all bleary-eyed and tired, I'd get on my bike, I'd bike to work, whatever. It is the fact that I have to be, ideally, out the door around 8 o'clock, which means if I'm on a bicycle, I got to get up at like 7-something, and that is just, my body just doesn't want to work. I just wake up at 7, 7:15, and I feel hungover every day, even though I am not. I just feel terrible, and I cannot get my crap together enough to bicycle at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's just very difficult for me. So that's why I'm not bicycling this week, because it's just very difficult. It has nothing to do with the bicycling. It's just the schedule. So, but again, Monday, starting Monday, they're going to start taking $18 away from these lesser children, these God's lesser creations, or whatever the medical, what is that movie, Children of a Lesser God, or whatever that is?
I have no idea.
They're retarded children. They're not lesser.
Especially able.
No, I'm referencing the movie. Wasn't that Children of a Lesser God? Wasn't that about retarded people?
Or
was that about deaf
for
people?
A movie?
Isn't that what it's about? Well, I don't know. But the handicapped, capable. Differently handicapped.
Differently abled.
But that's a stupid thing. Everybody's differently abled. Lance Armstrong's differently abled than I am. Doesn't mean he's retarded. Anyway, I'm just saying. That term means nothing. Everybody's differently abled. Can you play guitar?
No.
So there you go. You're differently abled than a guy who can play guitar. It's a stupid goddamn term.
You're calling me retarded?
Yes. According to the language police, you are retarded if you are differently abled than somebody else. I can't match my shoes to my belt correctly. Does that mean I'm retarded? Probably. Anywho, so starting Monday, I got a bicycle every day. They're going to take 18 bucks away from the Children of a Lesser God or whatever.
Every day for a year?
Every work day for a year. So that's the thing. So that's why I have not bicycled today. Anyway, so I swear.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't blame you then. I'm not helping.
I'm saving up my sloth. I'm slothing all this week.
Gonna eat a big pizza tonight?
I am. Gonna eat a big pizza, and I'm gonna watch the director's cut of That Thing You Do. So I swear to God, purely by coincidence, and Sarah is my witness on this, purely by sheer coincidence, I swear to God, because I've got the booklet that came with it. Here's what I got in the mail Monday. I got in the mail from the American Diabetes Association, from the Diabetes Care Association of America. They sent me this huge envelope, and I swear to God, when you're in radio, you get sent a lot of weird promotional items, gewgaws, tchotchkes. You get sent books and CDs that people want you to talk about. I'm not complaining. It's kind of cool, actually. Even people send you all kinds of stuff they want you to mention. Or you'll get sent sometimes like a new food product or whatever, something because they want you to talk about it and get a little publicity for them. So the American Diabetes Association, I swear to God, this is true. I got a huge box in the mail on Monday. And inside, hear this? Inside is a bathroom scale.
Yes, there is. I can't believe they shipped that to you.
And it says, I can't even imagine the postage that they must have spent on this. And it says, and it's all about one study showing 16% of people with diabetes fail to properly code their scales or they use. And it's all about how you can't tell whether you're at risk for diabetes if you don't know your true weight. And in order to know your true weight, your scale can't be screwed up. I swear to God, it's an ad campaign that is all about getting people to properly calibrate their bathroom scales. So they sent me a bathroom scale. And the irony is, I think it's actually calibrated wrong. I don't even know. Is it set at zero? Oh, no, it's right. So I actually have, in the mail, I have a bathroom scale.
And that's what we've been needing in here for years.
I don't know where the other scale went. I do not know how much I weigh.
I don't either.
I will step. Do you want to take a guess at how much I weigh? Keep in mind I have these shoes on. Because that's what makes all the difference.
198.
Shoes. I don't weigh 190. I don't weigh 190.
What did you weigh last time?
Not bad.
Like 170 or something?
198 pounds.
I'd say you were 177.
All right, I'll stand on the scale, and I'll reveal my weight. Now, here's the thing. You don't have to reveal your weight, obviously, because I know my boundaries. But I want you to stand on the scale on the air. You don't have to reveal your weight. I just want to hear your reaction.
Oh, God.
Okay?
Okay.
If I stand on the scale and reveal my weight, you have to do it.
All right, you do it first. I think 177.
You have to be might when you do it, too. All right.
Okay.
Andy, you want to guess my weight? Step right up. Guess my weight. Win some crap.
Do I say it now?
Yes.
Yeah.
175.
All right. Thank you, Tim. I appreciate that. I'll take my shoes off.
He's laughing. He was just trying to be nice.
I'm taking my shoes off, by the way. Oh, quit. Don't.
Whatever.
I didn't bicycle. Why would my feet smell?
You know what? I'm glad you're taking off your shoes because you don't have any excuses for the extra poundage.
All right. I weigh 185. My stocking feet, I have pants on, but I weigh 185. So let's say 183.
Why would we say 183?
Because I'm wearing 2 pounds of clothing. So I weigh 183.
And had a hearty lunch.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I just had some chicken.
All right, I'm handing you the scale.
Oh.
There you go. You don't have to reveal your weight, but you got to be mic'd. You got to be mic'd when you stand on it.
I haven't weighed myself in a while.
And then we got to break. God damn, I love these shoes. All right.
Can you please put them back on?
I'm putting them back on. I got to unlace them.
Okay, here we go.
All right, Sarah, standing on the scale.
Any guesses? You better not.
98 pounds.
I can't see.
Uh-huh. Sure. Yeah, I can't read it.
Oh, that's depressing.
Really? Fantastic. Excellent.
Oh, man.
Good times. All right. Thank you.
Thanks for depressing me.
It's what I do.
Why would you do that to me? Well, you know, I've been riding my bike, so maybe it's muscle.
Well, that's the other thing, and I don't want to sit and bore the audience by talking about our weight, because it makes us sound really neurotic. But I will say this. You know what they sell at the Sharper Image for like $150? They sell this scale that you stand on in your bare feet, and it tells you your weight, but then it also calibrates your body fat. That's the other thing I want to know. I want to know why body fat is, and I want to do it without using those like protractor clippy fat things. So there's like a scale you can buy at the Sharper Image that'll tell you your body fat as well.
Well, that started instant diet for me.
Yeah. All right, let's break. Come back. Catherine is on hold. She says, Rick should shut it. Okay. Well, we'll take that call and your observations as well. It's a Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. I'll put the Emerson blog spot, the challenge thing, up on my website, too. All right, back after this. Here's Faith No More. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Show live.
from Portland.
503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. On the way, a call from Catherine who wants me to shut it. We got Tim Riley coming up with the Ministry of at the Ministry of Truth, your dispute. Tom Likas at 3, Don and Mike at 7, and so forth. I can probably either do the top 5, or I can do this hunt for the second worst story ever. By the way, attention Jesse Cunningham. Willie Nelson's 4th of July picnic happening at the Gorge Amphitheater, 4th of July, 2007. Starring Willie Nelson and family with special guests Sunvolt, Old 97s, and the Drive-By Truckers. That's going to be pretty much the best thing ever. Willie Nelson, Sunvolt, Old 97s, the Drive-By Truckers. That is fantastic. So there you go. I am all over that. I'm all over that. And by the way, I've already resigned myself to the fact that that's a whole series of guests that we'll never get on the show. So, all right, let's do this call, and then we'll talk to Tim Riley. Hi, Catherine.
Hello, Rick.
Hi. How is it that you would like me to shut it, or why?
Well, I think I said this guy specifically. Why don't you drink a Viso and shut the F up?
Okay. Well, hold on. Let me get the first half of that taken care of. Let me open the opening a bottle right now and.
I mean, when you get up in the morning,
yes.
When you get up in the morning, down one of those puppies, you got the energy, get on the bike and move. A geriatric, quadriplegic Jewish grandmother does not whine as much as your ass.
All right, that's funny. All right, that's, you know what, that comment right there has raised this call from mere nagging to actual comedy. Well done. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Thank you, Kat. I will, on behalf of, just for you, I will attempt to quote, shut it for the rest of the day.
Okay, see what you do.
Thanks, Kathy.
All right,
there you go, Catherine, ladies and gentlemen. When did we start referring to all random nouns as puppies? When did that happen in American culture? We need to stop that. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, he is your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Oh, my. Lindsay Lohan is back doing drugs and lots of them.
Fantastic.
Now, a magazine claims that Lohan was doing tens of cocaine and ecstasy, plus consuming copious amounts of alcohol during the Coachella Music Festival. It's that hippie thing out in California. Her drinking and drinking is out of control. She's learned nothing in rehab, says a close friend. At Coachella, Lindsay bought 6 tablets of ecstasy, 3 with an imprint of a blue smurf, and 3 with a pink diamond.
I am so... I can never be a real drug user, because I would be afraid to just buy drugs from somebody. How do you know that, you know?
Well, you could ask a young girl. Apparently, they know all this stuff.
I guess, because it's like, I've talked about this openly in the past, that there are drugs that sound, and I mean this just, I'm not saying you should do drugs, but I'm just saying, in terms of marketing, the people who sell drugs have done a good marketing job, because there are drugs that sound like they would be fantastic. But I would just be afraid too, because it's like, maybe, you know, like, hey, well, I'm looking for some ecstasy. Well, maybe he's really giving you children's aspirin. Maybe he's giving you strychnine. How do you know? I would never trust anybody to sell me the correct drug.
Well, Lindsay also bought an 8-ball of cocaine. She did a line of coke all weekend. She was always the last one to leave all-night parties because she was flying higher than a kite. One morning, she ordered a $400 breakfast, two bottles of Cattell 1 vodka, one bottle of Belvedere vodka, and a bottle of Petron tequila.
How much could you possibly drink if you're Lindsay... Well, I mean...
She's Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, same, never mind.
She's drifting in a 24-7 haze. She crushed ecstasy into the coke and snorted it into a hardcore rush. As she pours all her stuff into a 16-ounce water bottle and drinks it straight and mixes some of it with soda, she also loves tequila and champagne.
All right. I mean, look, I was going to say I don't pass judgment, but I think we all know that's not true. But it just seems like being a junkie, and again, I don't care what anybody does, whatever. It doesn't matter to me. Everything ought to be legal, in my opinion. But it just seems like... I always talk about the some of the Japanese porn and how it just seems like they've burned themselves out on sex so much as a culture. That's why they've got to have anime with, like, Sailor Moon, you know, and a bunch of weird tentacle molesting.
And then they have a low birth rate in Japan.
Yeah, well, because...
Go figure that.
Because, again, because regular sex is clearly just so uninteresting to them at this point that they've just... That is, you know, unless it's like, really, unless it's an anime girl having sex with a vending machine, it just doesn't... It does not even throw by it. That's the same thing with drugs. I mean, it seems like you start off because you do a line of coke and you feel great and then whatever. And then you flash forward to Lindsay Lohan, who is mixing cocaine and ecstasy
And, like, whatever she finds
Lighter
behind...
fluid and antifreeze.
Yeah, cat litter. crushing it all into a mix and then dumping it into a bottle of tequila and squishing it around and drinking it with a Gatorade chaser.
I feel refreshed.
That's just awful.
It's just a lot of work, and it seems like you're just having to do weirder and weirder things, and pretty soon she's smoking carpet fibers. And
she's going to go to the Bahamas and die.
Yeah, I mean... Really, it just seems like she ought to skip to that point now. Just go to the bottom of the page and just save us all the trouble.
Meanwhile, fans of HBO's Entourage don't need to worry about extending downtime between seasons. According to ZapToIt.com, the third season finale of the comedy will air Sunday, June 3rd, with the fourth season returning just 2 weeks later on Sunday, June 17th.
Right on!
Now, the third season has been split up with the first 12 episodes airing late summer and the remaining 8 airing next spring. The HBO series follows, well, you know it. The final book of the Harry Potter Boy Wizard series is already in high demand. Amazon.com has announced more than 1 million advance orders have been placed for Harry Potter and the Deadly Hallows. More than...
Hello!
more than 2 months before July 21st release date.
That's fantastic.
The Harry Potter series has already sold more than 325 million copies worldwide. The four books have been released as feature films.
I have not... I was talking to Susan Reynolds about this the other day, and she asked me if I'd pre-ordered, and I thought that we had... I talked to Lauren, I guess we haven't pre-ordered it. But, you know, it doesn't matter, because I'm going to stand in line anyway. The last three Harry Potter books, I stood in line at midnight like a nerd, and you know what? That's fine. I'm okay with that.
Will you buy me one?
Are you going to be there?
I give you money.
Are you not going to stand in line? Come on.
I never stood in line.
Oh, I'm sorry, little miss.
No,
It's just what?
It's just a... I just don't have a desire to stand in line.
No one has.
People dressed like wizards.
You know, I like you read the book, but somehow you're too good to be among the people.
I didn't say I was too good.
Well, then you should do it. I'm going to be there. Come on. What more motivation do you need? even in Kennewick, when the last one came out, I was in Kennewick, and I stood in line in Kennewick. How depressing is that? In line in Kennewick, Washington, at a bookstore at midnight to buy a Harry Potter book.
I thought he made like a personal appearance there.
No, he doesn't even know. He's like God. He doesn't know Kennewick exists. No, the thing about that book is, though, you got to buy it, and by you, I mean me, buy it and like lock myself in a room and read it that day before some dick starts spreading the spoilers all over the internet. So I will proudly stand in line with the rest of the morons for that. Damn straight I will.
Meanwhile, four members of NSYNC, including Justin Timberlake, are facing a multi-million-dollar lawsuit for allegedly ripping off some of their hit songs. According to Material, they claim that NSYNC's 2001 tune Up Against the Wall was very similar to a song demo that was given to Jive Records in 1990. It was also the same title. This is from musician Troy Alexander. His attorneys say it's just too similar. And apparently the band members aren't aware of the claim yet, but they will be served papers on it.
By the way, I have posted the Emerson Bicycle Challenge at rickemerson.com. You can go there now and you can read it for yourself. Yeah, you bastards.
Star TV has apparently fired a closing arguments host and former prosecutor Nancy Grace.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the pink slip was issued yesterday.
Oh, so great.
However, Court TV only said, I don't know, when asked if Grace was out. Later in the day, Grace released a statement through her employer, CNN, claiming, after 10 wonderful years at Court TV, I've decided to leave the network to focus on my Kidline news program and my charitable endeavors.
What kind of charity could Nancy Grace possibly have?
I don't know.
Jesus. What do you do? Well, I go to cancer wards and scare children. I go and I shriek at dying children. I mean, she's just so terrifying, and she just seems like an awful, horrible person. Oh, we have a little bit of breaking news. Hold on, let's see. This is Ken. Hi, Ken. Do you have breaking news for us, sir?
Yeah. Not that I revel in anyone's misery, but this person has a place in hell. I was reading on the internet this morning that Ward Weaver got shimmed by his barber. Of all people.
That happened a long time ago, and they keep putting that story out.
Oh, is this... Okay, this
that
is...
That was last month.
This is not a recent shiving. Apparently, no. This is a shiving that happened some time ago, sir.
Well, maybe it happened again. I mean, would that be a bad thing?
Oh, no, that'd be great. I'm for him being shivved every day, actually. There ought to be a morning shiving.
There's a little Sweeney Todd.
Yeah. Wes, look at that. Look at you with the Sweeney Todd reference. Way to go. Thank you,
Thank
sir.
Thank you.
All right.
For some reason, you know... Some of these news organizations do what Drudge does.
Yeah.
They put out stories like a month after they happen and try to make it sound like it just happened.
It was a month ago.
With the siren icon.
Yeah.
With the flashing siren and the huge red type.
All right.
There are cameras everywhere.
No.
We're shocked.
All right.
We'll correct our behavior immediately, now that we know that we're being watched.
One for every 14 Britons. Be afraid. All right.
Well, that's it for now.
Okay.
That's enough news.
There's the obligatory pause every day while we wonder what we're doing. There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Riley, greatest newsman in the history of all humanity. He'll be back a little over an hour. 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 7 o'clock. Tim Riley at the top of the hour all the way through the Tom Likas show, which is coming up. All right. We should run a break here, huh? What do you think?
We could.
All right. We break.
Might as well.
We come back. I don't know about time for anything meaningful. Probably not. Now I can do 503-733-2970 if you'd like to engage in just a random nitwittery before the end of the program today. 503-733-2970. This email says, Rick, Jesus, I bicycle 19 miles to work. Suck it up. Get on the bike and quit your whining. Rodriguez out.
Thank you. I look further away than you do, too.
That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Since you moved? That's totally not true. You live like a block further than
No, because this is like almost down toward the Ross Island Bridge.
I don't really know that that's true. Where do you... Well, I don't want to ask. I can't remember the
Can
street
I give you my address?
Sarah's going to be home alone tonight. Come by and see her, won't you please? Back after this. Now into the saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. Coming up tomorrow, we will, I swear to God, talk to Dennis Fitzenberger. I bumped 2 days in a row now.
Oh, man. It's not intentional, Dennis.
I'm an ass. Hi, sir. I'm an ass. Rick, while watching the Cavs play the Nets last night, the camera panned to the big scoreboard. Across the bottom, it said, I kid you not, ClevelandClinic.com. He was missing the clown horn big time. Here you go, sir. 503-733-2970. Starting the day with randomness, ending the day with randomness. Let's just take these calls. John, we got multiple Johns. John, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hi, Rick. Hi, Sarah.
What's up?
Hello.
We had a little impromptu meeting today at work, and the company asked us which radio station they should advertise with to hire drivers. And I had to step up and tell them Rick Emerson.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
970.
May I ask what kind of company this is?
Concrete delivery.
Excellent, excellent. So they said, so they're looking for delivery drivers, or, you know, guys to drive the truck anyway?
Terrific. Yeah, they are looking for concrete delivery drivers, not cement truck drivers, concrete delivery drivers.
Dumb question. What's the difference?
Cement is an additive. Concrete is the final result.
But which one is the truck with the big round thing that's always turning?
That is a concrete or ready-mix truck.
Excellent. Okay. And so you said by God, the Rick Emerson Show reaches delivery drivers or would-be delivery drivers far and wide.
Far and wide. You would be the only one that would have listeners that would understand the demographics involved.
That's exactly what we're talking about. Did they take your advice? Did they take it seriously?
They are taking it seriously.
Cool.
Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That means a lot to me, sir. I really do appreciate that. And in fact, do me a favor. I promise we won't bother the company. We won't badger them. But if you can hang on hold for a second, I'm going to have you give, if you don't mind, the name of your company to Scotty, just so like when the call comes in, they kind of know the backstory on it.
I can do that.
Cool. Hang on a second, sir. Don't go anywhere. This is John. Scotty, if you can talk to John from John number one there. And just get the name of his company. Yeah, we want the, you know, just so we kind of know the deal. John number two. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, this is John number two. I think I was meant to call. Second time, semi-long time caller. I'm a truck driver myself, but that's not how I called.
Excellent.
Okay, I just had a story this morning on my way to work about O.J., if you want an O.J. story.
Yes.
I guess he was going to the Derby over the weekend or whenever it was, and in a restaurant, he had his little entourage of 12 people, where the owner, whose last name was Rudy, I don't suppose it was Jack Rudy, but he was asked. One of the entourage or one of the other customers came up to the owner, Rudy, and said that they were real excited. They couldn't believe O.J. was there. And Rudy just got outraged because of O.J.'s arrogance and disgraceful behavior in public and everything.
How weird that O.J. still has an entourage at this point.
Well, you know, I don't know. They said he came in with 12 people, like his handlers, I guess. I guess some people buy him drinks or whatever. But the guy goes up to the table and says, I'm not going to serve you. And OJ ignored him, and then he said it again, I'm not going to serve you. And then later, OJ, the first decent thing he did since 94, actually came up to the phone over there and said, I understand, and they all left. And when after they left, everyone in the bar, the restaurant, gave him a standing ovation, and he's got over 100 emails already congratulating him for taking a stand.
Right on.
I took a picture with OJ, one of those sports stars that he poses with lots of celebrity athletes, and he took it down right after the murder.
Excellent. Very cool. Thank you for the call, sir.
No problem.
Thank you. That's John number two. All right, there you go. We want to thank CNN radio correspondents Lisa Goddard and Steve Kastenbaum. Tomorrow, Dennis Pitzenbarger, the Rick Emerson Show, as well as more details on the Emerson Bike Challenge, which is posted at rickemerson.com. Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah Exelon for AM 970 Solid State Radio in the newsroom. Tim Riley, a PA, is Scotty J, and the gatekeepers Dave Zinn. As always, don't let the bastards grind you down and do try to help the retarded. See you tomorrow.
How's your woodcock doing? Oh, my darling little woodcock.